Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. It is the 23rd of September, 2025, and I'm very happy you're here with us. We have an absolutely gigantic show today. It's only 3 p.m. Central Time already. Today's has been an insane news day. We have Trump's speech at the UN was absolutely bombshell, and not for the reasons that most people say. A lot of people talking about sort of the jokes that he made, some of the claims that he made about they gave me a broken escalator and a broken teleprompter. Kind of funny, kind of hinting at the overall insanity of the UN. But the actual points that he made about ending seven wars and Europe destroying itself and the UN contributing to the mass immigration crisis, he made some really powerful points here that I want to get into. But then after this, he goes to a meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky and apparently completely reverses on his long-held stance about the war in Ukraine. He now apparently backs them to the hilt and wants to take on Russia, calling it a paper tiger. We'll get into that in just a second, but I do want to go first to what I think is the most important part of Trump's speech at the UN. It does happen to include the part where he talks about the escalator and the teleprompter, but it's more than that. It's him talking about the uselessness of the UN when it comes to the entire point of their existence, ending wars. And he brags about ending seven wars in his time as president. Here's President Donald Trump addressing the UN earlier today.
I ended seven wars, and in all cases, they were raging with countless thousands of people being killed. This includes Cambodia and Thailand, Kosovo and Serbia, the Congo and Rwanda, a vicious, violent war that was, Pakistan and India, Israel and Iran, Egypt and Ethiopia, and Armenia and Azerbaijan. It included all of them. No president or prime minister, and for that matter, no other country has ever done anything close to that. And I did it in just 7 months. Never happened before. There's never been anything like that. Very honored to have done it. It's too bad that I had to do these things instead of the United Nations doing them. And sadly, in all cases, the United Nations did not even try to help in any of them. I ended seven wars, dealt with the leaders of each and every one of these countries, and never even received a phone call from the United Nations offering to help in finalizing the deal. All I got from the United Nations was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle. If the First Lady wasn't in great shape, she would have fallen, but she's in great shape. We're both in good shape. We both stood. And then a teleprompter that didn't work. These are the two things I got from the United Nations, a bad escalator and a bad teleprompter. Thank you very much. And by the way, it's working now. It just went on. Thank you. I think I should just do it the other way. It's easier. Thank you very much. I didn't think of it at the time because I was too busy working to save millions of lives. That is the saving and stopping of these wars. But later I realized that the United Nations wasn't there for us. They weren't there. I thought of it really after the fact, not during these negotiations, which were not easy. That being the case, what is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential. But it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. For the most part, at least for now, all they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter and then never follow that letter up. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve war.
All right, so that's President Trump at the UN bragging about ending seven different wars. Truly, an incredible accomplishment. But then immediately after that, he goes to a meeting with Zelensky and basically reverses his entire stance on Russia, Ukraine, promises to back them to the hilt. What explains this? I honestly can't even determine it. I've got a couple theories. Of course, could just be a negotiation tactic. And obviously Trump has been mad that Russia continues to fight the war. But why wouldn't they? There's been no peace agreement. There's been no treaty signed. Of course they're going to keep fighting. Why not?
Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move. And gentlemen, this is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Just an absolutely gigantic show we have for you today. I don't know how I'm going to be able to fit all of this in. Even just the news that's broken this morning is more than enough to cover, but we have a lot to, get into as a consequence of everything that's happened today, including a meeting between David Petraeus, former head of the CIA, and the Al-Qaeda terrorist that now runs Syria, courtesy of our intervention. Okay, we'll get into that and look at sort of what's behind that entire charade that we're watching. They also, ahead of Trump's speech to the UN, found a cache of SIM farms, a SIM card, like AI programmed cell phone, I don't even know what to call it, like a collection of these phones that could be used to take down the entire cellular network of New York City. Okay, that's a huge story with insane implications, and it may actually have something to do with the swatting attacks that right-wingers have been under for a while. So we'll get into that. I want to get into what Trump said during his UN speech, because he absolutely took a blowtorch to their most strongly held beliefs and, strongly supported programs, climate change, censorship, immigration. I mean, he really did take a sledgehammer to them, and it was wonderful to see, which is why we're sort of reeling at the fact that immediately after this, he puts out a statement basically completely reversing everything he's ever said about Ukraine. And we're scratching our heads trying to figure out exactly what's going on here. I have the Truth Social post from Trump. He says this: after getting to know and fully understand the Ukraine-Russia military and economic situation, and after seeing the economic trouble it's causing Russia, I think Ukraine, with the support of the European Union, is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in its original form. With time, patience, and the financial support of Europe, and in particular NATO, the original borders from where this war started is very much an option. Why not? Russia's been fighting aimlessly for 3.5 years, a war that should have taken a real military power less than a week to win. This is not distinguishing Russia. It is, in fact, making them look like a paper tiger. When the people living in Moscow and all of the great cities, towns, and districts throughout Russia find out what is really going on with this war, the fact that it's almost impossible for them to get gasoline through the long lines that are being formed and all of the other things that are taking place in their war economy, where most of their money is being spent on fighting Ukraine, which has great spirit and only getting better, Ukraine would be able to take their country back in its original form. Who knows? Maybe even go further than that. Putin and Russia are in big economic trouble, and this is the time for Ukraine to act. In any event, I wish both countries well. We will continue to supply weapons to NATO for NATO to do what they want with them. Good luck to all. What explains this? What explains this? How do we go from the unprecedented summit in Alaska with President Trump and President Putin seemingly on the cusp of a full-fledged peace agreement to now, I mean, how long has it been? A couple weeks later, the whole thing's falling apart and he's backing NATO to the hilt and they're going to try to take back all of Ukraine. I don't get it exactly. Nothing I've seen about the war situation makes Russia look like a paper tiger. It looks like they're doing rather well, actually. And it seems like they are in many ways winning, which is why they aren't begging for a peace agreement, which is why they weren't willing to give Trump any of the things that he demanded in order to get a peace agreement. I don't think they're losing this war. what is Trump doing here? Is this a negotiation tactic? That's what a lot of people think. I've noticed something that Trump does, and this is just my own interpretation, my own speculation about it, but it seems like when Trump is countermanded on the world stage, he then takes possession of the contradiction. What I mean by that is we have all these people in Qatar, right? Israel bombs the Hamas leadership in Qatar, and that might look humiliating for Trump because it might look that he is incapable of, you know, holding back his ally, and they sort of humiliated him, sort of made him look like a little girl. A female dog is the word I'm looking for. And so instead of going, oh, well, I didn't want that to happen, but they did it anyway, and that makes me mad. That's a weak position. So instead he says, actually, this was my idea. Actually, I told them to do that, and they did it with my permission. So he like takes ownership of things that I don't think he actually had anything to do with. Again, this is pure speculation, but it sort of comports with a lot of what I've seen through from Trump. And one thing we know that NATO and the EU and Ukraine and, you know, all these other organizations did before Trump got into office was they Trump-proofed the Ukraine war. They signed treaties and agreements that promised at least 5 years of support because they all thought, well, if Trump gets into office and cuts off the weapon supply, that's not going to be good. So we need to survive that 4 years. So they signed 5-year treaties saying, yes, we promised to supply weapons for 5 years. So now even if Trump gets into office, well, too bad, your predecessor signed a treaty. So you're obliged to, live up to that. And so maybe that's what's going on because obviously, clearly, and they just keep reminding us, Europe wants war. The European leadership is desperate to go to full-fledged war with Russia. And this is actually kind of convenient because last Thursday, I was hosting the Alex Jones Show for the last hour. It was actually when Charlie Kirk was murdered, and that interrupted a presentation that I'd prepared. So I'm going to give that presentation today, which is that Europe both desperately wants war and is incapable of waging war. And these two things are just absolutely undeniably true, and I'll lay out all the facts for you. But could that be an explanation to this, that Trump sees, okay, they're going to wage this war, I can't stop it, so I might as well own it. I might as well come out as the champion of this since it's going to happen anyway, and I'm going to look sort of impotent if I try to stop it and can't. I might as well embrace it. Again, speculation, I don't know. I'll open up the phone lines for your calls in this, probably in the third hour. But extremely but I don't think I'm alone in saying this is an extremely disappointing development out of Trump and really a suicidal development for all of Europe. And again, I was going to save this for maybe a little bit later, but you know, a lot of Trump's rhetoric during the UN speech was about the way that Europe is dying. And actually, dying isn't the right word. Being killed by its leadership, committing suicide in a lot of ways. Sometimes at the behest of, you know, the war powers and, you know, well, we got to defeat Russia, so we better blow up our nuclear power plants, Germany. Okay, that's retarded, but they did it and are continuing to do it and are, like, celebrating it as if it's a good thing. Of course, climate change is a big contributor to that. None of this makes any sense if Europe actually wants to persist in their, you know, existence for any long period of time. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is President Trump at the UN. Again, saying Europe is in serious trouble. So I cannot reconcile this. How is he giving a speech in the UN talking about ending war, talking about Europe being deeply in trouble, weak, fractious, incompetent, and yet an hour after this, he is telling Zelensky that, yeah, I'm going to back Europe going to war with Russia. I'm going to, you know, back to the hill. I mean, this just, there's no justification for this. It doesn't make any sense. So we're missing something. We're going to try to figure out what that thing is. But here's clip 10. Here's Trump telling Europe, hey, you guys are idiots. Let's watch.
Europe is in serious trouble. They've been invaded by a force of illegal aliens like nobody's ever seen before. Illegal aliens are pouring into Europe. Nobody is ever, and nobody's doing anything to change it, to get them out. It's not sustainable. And because they choose to be politically correct, they're doing just absolutely nothing about it. And I have to say, I look at London where you have a terrible mayor, terrible, terrible mayor. And it's been so changed, so changed. Now they want to go to Sharia law. but you're in a different country. You can't do that. Both the immigration and their suicidal energy ideas will be the death of Western Europe if something is not done immediately. They cannot, this cannot be sustained.
And it honestly can't. I mean, it is completely absurd. And it is, these aren't the only two attacks, but these are the main two sort of pincer attacks. Illegal immigration and cutting off the energy. And then going to war with the country that provides your energy. I mean, this is not the moves of an intelligent, you know, well thought out group of people. This is an insane asylum with an infinite budget and delusions of military grandeur. It's absurd. It's utterly absurd. Let's go to clip number 9 here. Again, this is Trump at the UN. Again, focusing on illegal immigration into the EU. And, you know, Alex talks about this quite a bit. And I think Trump realizes to a certain extent, I don't know if he realizes how much, he gets into it a little bit in the UN speech, that none of this is a mistake. None of this is an accident. Absolutely nothing happening to Europe or America or Canada or any other Western country right now is the result of their leadership trying their best and failing. They are under attack. They are committing suicide. That needs to be made clear. He keeps talking about how, you know, incompetent they are, how they're not good at what they're doing. No, they're great at what they're doing. What they do is psyop Europe into committing civilizational suicide. They're amazing at that. It's like it shouldn't happen. It's unbelievable. It's like doesn't make any sense. They're importing millions of migrants who all just start raping women by the tens of thousands and they just keep bringing them in. I mean, they get away with that. They have people actually out there with signs protesting in favor of that. The psychological power of these people is truly admirable. If you, you know, are a servant of evil, you have to admire it. Let's go to clip number 9 here, where Trump lays out some of the facts about the immigrant population in Europe. Let's watch.
According to the Council of Europe in 2024, almost 50% of inmates in German prisons were foreign nationals or migrants. In Austria, the number is 53% of the people in prisons were from places that weren't from where they are now. In Greece, the number was 54%, and in Switzerland, beautiful Switzerland, 72% of the people in prisons are from outside of Switzerland. When your prisons are filled with so-called asylum seekers who repaid kindness, and that's what they did, they repaid kindness with crime. It's time to end the failed experiment of open borders. You have to end it now.
Literally the most obvious common sense thing any world leader has ever said. Half of your prison population are foreigners in Germany. 72% of the people in prison in Switzerland are not from Switzerland. What? So you bring them in, you save their lives, you rescue them from their dinghies, and then they just start committing crimes against you, and then you retain them and you don't send them home. You care for them for the rest of their lives. I mean, this is, again, suicidal madness. One final video here, not from Trump, but from somebody else who was also noticed. It's not well reported, but you get hints of it, that Europe is in a state of absolute collapse. Let's go to clip number 1 here. Europe is falling apart.
So one of the biggest stories of this century is that Europe is falling apart. Many continue to deny this is happening, but here are 5 indisputable facts to prove it. Number 1, Mississippi is now wealthier than Europe's top economies. So America's poorest state now has a higher per capita GDP than the big 5 economies of Europe. We're talking UK, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain. Number 2, European spending power is collapsing. The disposable income for the average American is now 80% higher than the average UK or French citizen and about 50% higher than the average German. Number 3, European companies have stagnated. So Nvidia alone is worth more than every company on the UK stock market combined. Number 4, Europe has the lowest fertility rate of any continent. So all those generous social welfare programs that Europe is famous for, they're all going to collapse because there are going to be way more seniors taking from the system than there are young people paying into it. But there is one way for Europe to get out of this mess, and that's through the potential productivity gains of new tech like AI and robotics. But sadly, and this brings us to number 5, Europe is not competitive in any of these areas. There are no European AI leaders, no chip makers, no rocket companies, no social media giants, no relevant players in space technology, drones, battery storage, crypto and blockchain, robots. These people don't even have air conditioning. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Europe. I'm rooting for them. But you guys need to get your shit together.
So they've absolutely crippled themselves. They've literally destroyed their own ability to produce energy. Just out of this insane drive to stop climate change that isn't even real and isn't happening. And of course, Donald Trump talked about that too. But that really is at the center of so many of the decisions that they've made. But of course, the Ponzi scheme financial system that they set up that necessitates an infinite level of growth. And then you're not having kids because you've, you know, demoralized and bankrupted your entire population. So nobody's having kids. And then you bring in millions of foreigners ostensibly to work the jobs that there aren't kids anymore to work, but then they all go on the dole and they all drain the welfare state, and then the welfare state raises its retirement age to pay for all the new people they brought in to pay for the pension fund. I mean, again, am I missing something here, or is this all suicidally stupid? No, it's all suicidally stupid, and it's all on purpose, and it's all completely, entirely by design. And it's been working. It's been working extremely well. They, like I said, it's, if you're sort of a scum-sucking Satanist, then you're probably very impressed at the ability of Europe to destroy itself without, you know, creating an alarm in the people in Europe to defend themselves. It's really something else. But it takes a long time. But it's a slow process replacing an entire population. It's a slow process committing genocide in a way that isn't even detected by those being genocided. It's, well, it could use a boost. It could use a turbo boost. And of course, that turbo boost, the instance of just infinite convenience for those in power is, of course, war. You start war. Wow. You really speed up the whole death cult process, right? Of course, you just kill people outright. Very convenient, rather than having to wait for them to die or, you know, pass a suicide bill. You, of course, can censor things, and then censorship isn't even about hate or offense. It's actually your enemy propaganda, and it has all the, you know, force and weight of warfare when you go after people speaking against you. I mean, it's just, it would be incredibly convenient and a lot quicker to just go ahead and start a war. And that's obviously what they're trying to do. So again, these articles I have are from last week. I compiled these for Thursday because it was last week that Ursula von der Leyen gave her big rah-rah I'm Hitler speech in front of the EU. She's the commissioner, of course, and I also compiled a bunch of stuff about her family and where she married into, and you have to understand. I understand why people, like, roll their eyes when you say, like, they're all Nazis. These people are all Nazis, because it's like, okay, their ideology seems completely opposite of the Nazis, except in the centralized control and the one world government that was planned. I mean, there are some alignments, but unless you know sort of like the higher level ultimate plans of the Nazis and of the EU and like where these came from, they seem completely different. But no, they're all literally Nazis. I mean, it's Klaus Schwab, it's George Soros, it's Ursula von der Leyen. They all literally, their parents all ran like Jewish slave factories. Like all their factories were peopled and worked by Jewish slaves, literally all of them. It is really insane. That's a little side note. So last week she goes on this tear about how, you know, Europe needs to go to war. We need to be warlike. We need to really get ready to go to war with Russia. So I've got sort of two stacks combined here. The first part is Europe wants war desperately. And the second part is they cannot wage war at all. They are incapable of doing what they're setting out to do because they're suicidal, I think. That's my interpretation. So if we can go to this stack here. NATO, and this is all from last week, NATO ally could command 60,000 strong force in Ukraine, according to a general. French troops ready for their toughest engagements. And if we can go to .com, I'll go through all these articles one after the other. As President Emmanuel Macron mulls an official military deployment to Ukraine despite repeated Russian threats of retaliation, right? So there, NATO is saying they want 60,000 new troops. France issues its citizens with an invasion guide, including how to survive a nuclear attack after Macron warned Europe must prepare for war. Macron says he'll confer with allies on protecting Europe with French nuclear deterrence. Hey, remember this? Hey, remember when he said, don't worry, you're now under the French nuclear umbrella. And Russia was like, that's not possible. You don't know what you're dealing with here. You are not capable of protecting the entire continent of Europe. You hardly have any bombs. France orders hospitals to be ready for war by next year as Germany warns it's on alert should Putin use forthcoming military drills to attack Europe. And of course, this was all after the, you know, fake drone attack on Poland. NATO buys Palantir AI's warfighting Maven software system. Okay, so NATO is spending millions, if not tens of millions of dollars on high-tech AI warfighting system. Well, that's not the type of money you spend if you don't intend to use it, right? The Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, revealed this week French and British troops are actually on the ground in Ukraine, assisting the Ukrainian Air Force with the launch of Scalp EG Storm Shadow air-launched long-range cruise missiles towards targets in Russia, occupied Crimea, which he stated would also be required of German servicemen if they provide Ukraine with their long-range missiles. So an admission from the, you know, German leadership that France and England actually already have people in Ukraine fighting on the ground on behalf of NATO and Ukraine. German army reveals expected losses from conflict with Russia. This story is actually from yesterday, September 22nd. The German armed forces would expect to suffer 1,000 wounded soldiers a day in the event of a conflict with Russia, and they are gearing up for that. German deploys troops on Russia's doorstep for first time since World War II. Facing serious threat, PM Starmer says UK moving to war fighting readiness. Germans plan to reinstate conscription faces serious roadblock. Yeah, there's a problem when you try to conscript people for a war that is not in their benefit. Russia prepares to bring back the draft. Catastrophic report describes a lack of weapons, ammo, and a rapidly aging armed forces. So they don't have people, don't have weapons, don't have the infrastructure to build weapons. They don't have anything, but they are trying to start a war. Germany's Stern magazine calls for conscription of young people to take up arms to, quote, defend diversity in pro-war propaganda piece. Uh-huh. How's that going for you, I wonder? How compelling is that? We must fight for diversity. Oh, by diversity, you mean the millions of foreigners that you've brought into my land and terrify my sister? Great, I'll fight for them. Thanks. I mean, it's just retarded. And it's like, what do you think's going to happen to the millions of Turks in Germany? The millions of Syrians in Germany. Are they going to go fight for Germany? Are you an idiot? Come on. Conscription coming back to Europe. But which EU countries have reintroduced compulsory military service? Literally, they're reintroducing compulsory military service to force people to fight because they know nobody wants to fight because they don't, because Europe doesn't represent anything other than their own destruction. It's absurd. We'll do our bit. Britain's vow to fight with pride if conscription imposed to tackle Putin. Ah, yes. We will certainly join to fight Russia for some reason because, you know, we're the freedom-loving democracies, despite the fact that the UK is actually number one on the list of political arrest for speech. Britain's number one, okay? I don't think Russia's even in the top 10. So if you're actually talking about the values that inform democracy or the Enlightenment or anything else, then Russia's actually the better example. But here's the problem. So obviously they want to fight war. France, Germany, England, they're all gearing up to fight a war that they actually recognize they don't have the people, equipment, or capability to wage. Let's just go through how Europe's doing in general. French government collapsed last week. Only half of Britain said they'd ever fight for their country. Britain's face call-up if we go to war, but the head of the Russian tells ministers troop numbers are so low he would need to create or find more people. Because the public's mindset must change. Nobody wants to fight. 20,000 troops. We only have 25 battle tanks working at best in the UK. So the UK is like, we're going to field 20,000 people. And the actual people in the army are going, you know, we only have 25 tanks, right? That's it. That's all we have. Britain is heading for an IMF bailout, economists warn, as Reeves drags us back to the 1970s because their economy is completely hollow and collapsing and they're going to have to be bailed out by a bunch of fake money from the IMF, which is probably why they want to go to war. Germany loses 120,000 manufacturing employees in just 1 year. Again, just an outcome of the deliberate destruction of their infrastructure. Worse than the 2008 financial crisis, Germany becomes a nation of bankruptcy with no end in sight. So they're bankrupt, they're poor, they're demoralized, and they want to go to war with Russia. It's insane and suicidal, but that's just in line with everything else they've been doing for the last decade, so I guess it makes sense.
I'm jacked up on the Methylene Blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue and the Ultimate CMOS on a monthly basis. Take about 5-year supplements. So it's been helping me out for the last 3 years, the last 22 pounds. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I was honestly in the chat on Rumble, bashing, like getting sick of Alex plugging it. But I tell you what, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I feel I actually subscribe monthly now to it. And I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I was so bad with the MS. I was in a wheelchair. That Methylene Blue is able to get everything that you're taking, all your antibiotics or whatever medicines you're taking, supplements, What it does, it helps it cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. Methylene blue will help things push it through to where it needs to go. I was at my store, and I keep the TV on at my store of InfoWars, and I heard Alex Jones talking about methylene blue. Well, right away, my ears perked up because I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I ordered 2 bottles of it because you had buy one, get one free. So I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing. I take the capsules twice. I take 2 of those a day.
And you're saying with the methylene blue, you're taking it with ivermectin, and you're using our methylene blue, and it's
yeah.
Kept you regressed, but now you're taking this and you're back to being normal, or what's your level at
I'm
right
walking.
Now? Okay.
No, I'm, you know, I own a jewelry store and I'm able to, don't get me wrong, I have bad days.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something, I'm walking without a cane.
Okay.
And the bad days that I may have, maybe like once every couple weeks, but I'm able to speak properly where my everything was lagging with me.
Right.
The lesions were showing very bright in my brain. And when I started on the methylene blue, which I couldn't take the liquid. I bought the liquid, but I just couldn't get it down. And I was trying to find like a concoction.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the pills came out. So I ordered the pills. I take 2 of those a day. I've been taking that with everything else, with the ivermectin. I take 1 pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Well, that's great to hear. You know,
talk to you.
Because, you know, I'm glad to hear that. That really makes me feel good for, you know, the products that we offer to people. And, you know, the methylene blue, it really has been a game changer around here in terms of people getting it and seeing effects immediately, being able to acquire that quality of life they want. And that's really great to hear.
I will put money on it. Like I said, I used to have to pay $10,000 a week to get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take 2 pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you
for helping your family too, because, you know, sometimes people, they don't want to tell their family. They don't want to say anything because then, oh, you're supposed to mind your own business and not tell people about health. That's a doctor's job, you know, but no, it is our job to tell our families, hey, this is what I found out. This is what I found that works. Why don't you try it?
This is the War Room, and war is the topic of conversation today. Donald Trump first brags about his ability to stop war in the UN, only to then completely reverse and say, actually, we're doubling down on Ukraine support, and we're going to go to full war with Russia, and we're getting back all the Ukraine territory. Which, I don't know, does that include Crimea? I mean, again, I don't get it. I don't understand it, and I don't know who to blame exactly. I guess I'll blame Trump for now. But man, we have so many other stories to get into. We're going to get into this weird, very troubling story about the cell phone terrorist nest that was found in New York, 35 miles from New York City. Of course, leftist violence continues to be a major topic of conversation, as yesterday Trump did sign a declaration declaring Antifa domestic terrorists. Very good news. We'll get into what that entails. Of course, his statement yesterday about the causes of autism was unbelievably amazing, and I don't think people recognize how amazing it was. And I don't think I comprehended while we were live why he was framing it around Tylenol, but I think I figured it out, and I think it was an incredibly brilliant move that both hid his intentions from his enemies, but also, unfortunately, convinced a bunch of people on the right that he wasn't doing anything real. I'll explain what was really behind all of that. And that's just like barely scratching the surface. There's so much more. There's free speech, anti-free speech laws passing in California that are incredibly troubling that happened during the same day that Charlie Kirk was murdered, so nobody really paid attention to it. I just have an infinite number of stuff to talk about today. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com keeps us on the air in the fight and bringing you the truth, regardless of who it helps, who it hurts. The truth is the truth. Let the chips fall where they may. And right now there's a massive sale going on. If you buy any Ultra Methylene Blue product, you get Atomic Defense at 70% off. By any Methylene Blue product, the liquid tincture or the capsules, and you get Atomic Defense at 70% off. And so many of our products are designed to work together to maximize and really accelerate their efficacy. And then, of course, the very cool America First hat, which I think there's only 250 of these, and they're hand-stitched, well, maybe not hand-stitched, but they're stitched. It's not just like an iron-on thing. It's not just, you know, some stick-on letters. This is a very, very high quality, very well-made, only 250 of them. So they are a collector's item, and they come with a certificate of authentication. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. Something else very odd happened at the UN. Very strange. Let me correct that. Something very typical happened at the UN. Something that should be strange. That should be unimaginable. And that is that a former Al-Qaeda terrorist was welcomed with open arms by the international community. Again, this is very weird, but this is the way America does things. It's actually sort of a habit that we're in, where we prop up a terrorist, then we sort of sheep dip them, whitewash them, act like they're actually, you know, bringing freedom to their country. Then when, of course, they reveal themselves as the despotic madmen that they always were, we then make them an enemy, and it gives us an excuse to go to war. So we're now in that transition phase where we're acting like this is a, you know, good guy. General Petraeus, former general with the CIA that was actually, you know, fighting Al-Qaeda in the Middle East for a long time, welcomes this guy with open arms. And so they're going to rehabilitate him. They're going to act like he's this amazing person. And then maybe 5 years from now, they're going to all realize he's a terrorist. And oh my God, we have to go to war with Syria. It'll be Iraq all over again. It's crazy to see this play out in real time when absolutely everybody knows what they're doing. But hey, who's going to stop them, right? Stories at InfoWars. Syria's former Al-Qaeda terrorist president welcomed by Washington. On Sunday, Syrian president and former Al-Qaeda terrorist Ahmed Hussein al-Shara, a.k.a. Abu Muhammad al-Jilani, a diversity-friendly jihadi, arrived in the United States to attend the United Nations General Assembly in New York City, the first Syrian leader to do so in almost 60 years. And we'll get into why that exactly is, but let's go to a video or two of this, shall we? We got a couple examples. Let's go to the shorter one here. It's General Petraeus asking this terrorist who, unless I'm mistaken, I mean, I haven't seen the video, but I'm pretty sure this guy actually like beheaded people on behalf of Al-Qaeda. Like he was a literal terrorist. He was on the State Department website with a $10 million bounty on his head like last year. This year he's shaking hands with and being welcomed by General David Petraeus. Let's go to one of those videos, guys. Clip 38.
Salam alaikum, Sayyid Rais.
What's up?
Salam alaikum.
And sure,
rotten terrorist.
As you know, Mr. President, I spent over 37 years in the U.S. Army, and I was a soldier, not a diplomat. So I hope you'll forgive me if I speak with the directness of the old soldier that I am as I get the first question out of the way. Because the fact is that we were on different sides when I was commanding the surge in Iraq. You were, of course, detained by U.S. forces for some 5 years, including, again, when I was the four-star there. And here you are now as the president of Syria.
Wow.
Which your forces liberated from the murderous Bashar al-Assad regime.
The murderous Bashar al-Assad regime. All right, we can take it down. So that's him welcoming into the U.N. Let's go to the next video now, 39. This is him asking, you know, are you sleeping well? How you doing, buddy? You doing good? Let's watch.
So this next one is about you personally. How are you holding up under all this pressure? Are you getting time to do some thinking? Are you getting enough sleep at night? Again, I've been there, and it is so very, very hard. And your many fans, and I am one of them.
I'm one.
We do have worries.
Oh, so sweet. Oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that so loving and beautiful? The murderous head of the CIA showing so much concern for his former enemy. A guy who spent 5 years in American prison as a terrorist. I'm going to go to DocCam here. This is the timeline. This is the literal timeline of a rebranded friend of America. And he goes from 2006 being an inmate on terrorist charges to 2017 being a just stereotypical cutout Islamic extremist terrorist on the wanted list, $10 million. To 2025, he's wearing a suit. He's all cleaned up and General Petraeus is filleting him in front of everybody. Isn't that a beautiful, beautiful story? It's just completely insane. It's just everything that happens in foreign policy is just a gigantic deceit. All of it. This is what we mean when we say it's a puppet show, when we say it's kabuki theater. None of it means anything. Syria is significantly less stable, less safe. Al-Jolani is more murderous than Bashar al-Assad ever was. This is completely absurd. Because, obviously, the real motivations behind everything that America slash Israel slash NATO slash Turkey is doing is for their own interests, for their own benefit. They don't give a damn about anything that they claim to care about. Bashar al-Assad was their enemy, so he had to be destroyed. Now, they'll call him murderous. They claim he chemically attacked his own people or, you know, attacked his own people with chemical weapons. Just all total BS, nonsense, bullcrap. But they don't care. They just need whatever propaganda out there to facilitate their, you know, greater organizational plans, which include the Greater Israel Project, which, of course, Bashar al-Assad was a major barrier to. Again, from InfoWars, Syria's former al-Qaeda terrorist president, welcomed by Washington. They also have this picture of him with Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio met with former al-Qaeda commander, Syria's Ahmad al-Shara, once hunted with a $10 million bounty on his head. The former terrorist once had that $10 million bounty on his head by the U.S., but is now welcomed as a political peer by Washington establishment following his radical Islamic takeover of Syria in November. And by the way, we've been over this. People still don't know how that takeover happened. Bashar al-Assad withstood like 15 years of attempts by America, the CIA, and Israel to take him out in a variety of different deceitful, devious, destructive ways. It never worked. And then suddenly, when nobody was expecting it, within 2 weeks, the entire country collapsed. What explains this? Well, what explains it is, in fact, they had tricked the Syrian army into downloading an app that gave them total access to every soldier's phone. It's completely crazy. They somehow co-opted the wife of Bashar al-Assad to endorse this app that was like, we just want to support the Syrian national forces. So just download our app and we'll send you $50. Isn't that great? It's a free lunch. Isn't that amazing? No strings attached. And so every Syrian soldier downloaded this app, got $50, and then the app was used to completely destroy their communications and allow for the 2 week siege of Syria that collapsed the Bashar al-Assad government. The army couldn't defend themselves because they couldn't coordinate. They couldn't talk to each other. They were cutting off communications. They were sending fake messages, sending people to the wrong place. I mean, it totally destroyed them. It was a very sophisticated, intelligence attack. Apparently carried out by a mob of barbarians out of the eastern part of Turkey. Okay, I'm sure that's who did this, right? I'm sure they're the ones that were able to co-opt the president's wife into... No, this was a Mossad operation, obviously. It's in their wheelhouse. Ex-CIA chief Petraeus hails former al-Qaeda leader for his clear vision in Syria. Such a clear vision. Such a good guy. Now, in reality, ever since this guy got into office, in other words, since this guy overthrew the actual president of Syria and installed himself as a warlord, there has been a series of ethnic cleansing campaigns against the minorities in Syria, minorities that had been protected by the Alawite leadership of Bashar al-Assad, Alawites being, of course, a more moderate sect of Islam that actually allowed for minorities to exist in their country, protected Christians, and actually fought against. And their number one enemy was the radical Islamist Wahhabist ISIS out of Saudi Arabia, trained and supplied and fomented by, of course, our government. And there's a video that I have of Tulsi Gabbard talking about this. Let's go ahead and go to clip number 26 here, because I'll get into what exactly is going on in Syria today with the, you know, purging of minorities in the mass murders carried out by the man who is now, you know, shaking hands with Marco Rubio and being honored by the CIA chief, David Petraeus. Again, none of this actually should be surprising to anybody. This is just how things work. And I hope we're all waking up to this. Just don't accept it. It's not how it should work, but it is how it works. Let's go to clip number 26 here. This is Tulsi Gabbard 7 years ago talking about what's really happening in Syria. Let's watch.
They expressed a question. They said, why is it that the United States, its allies and other countries are providing support, are providing arms to terrorist groups like al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, Ahrar al-Sham, ISIS, who are on the ground there raping, kidnapping, torturing, and killing the Syrian people, children, men, women, people of all ages. They asked me, why is the United States and its allies supporting these terrorist groups who are destroying Syria when it was al-Qaeda who attacked the United States on 9/11, not Syria? I didn't have an answer for them.
Obviously, the United States government denies providing any sort of help to the terrorist groups that you're talking about. They say they provide help for the rebel groups. Tell us more about
the reality is, Jake, the reality is, and I'm glad you brought up that point, because this is an often talked about thing by people like Adam Kinzinger and others saying, well, we've got to support the moderate rebels. Every place that I went, every person that I spoke to, I asked this question to them. And without hesitation, they said, there are no moderate rebels. Who are these moderate rebels that people keep speaking of? Regardless of the name of these groups, the strongest fighting force on the ground in Syria is al-Nusra, or al-Qaeda and ISIS. That is a fact. There's a number of different other groups. All of them essentially are fighting alongside, with, or under the command of the strongest group on the ground that's trying to overthrow Assad. The Syrian people recognize, and they know, that if President Assad is overthrown, then al-Qaeda or a group like al-Qaeda that has been killing Christians, killing people simply because of their religion.
So, of course, she's absolutely right and was absolutely right, totally vindicated, 100%, which is why, you know, they put her on the no-fly list and kicked her out of the Democratic Party. Because she's exactly right about what she was saying. And the takeover of al-Qaeda and exactly the person she said was now put in place. And the fact that this guy was held by America for 5 years, then became a terrorist with a $10 million reward, and is now there. Again, none of that should be surprising, because this is how things work. They get a guy in prison and they go, hey, you're either going to rot away here forever, but you're a smart guy. You're pretty smart. You got leadership capabilities. How about you work for us? Work for us and you can be in charge of Syria. How's that sound? And they agree. And now they're double agents. Here he is shaking hands with the president of the United States. Just totally baffling. Because here's what's actually happening in Syria. R.U. Alawi is the name of the article at humanrightswatch.org. In early March 2025, the veneer of stability that marked the first days of the post-Assad Syria, shattered when deadly insurgent attacks against government forces along the coast by armed men whom officials described as loyalists of the former government. Dozens were killed, triggering a wave of violent abuses against Alawi communities. Government forces comprising defense and interior ministry units alongside government aligned armed groups and armed volunteers swept through the Alawi neighborhood, majority neighborhoods, towns and villages in Tartus, Latakia and Hama governance, leaving behind torched homes, piled bodies, mass graves, and broken communities. These are the people that we're shaking hands with and saying, you have such a vision for Syria. Yeah, it's a vision that just doesn't include minorities. And to get rid of them, they are executing them en masse. Between March 7th and at least March 10th, government forces and their armed groups stormed through more than 30 Alawi majority towns, villages, and neighborhoods with the professed aim of targeting former government affiliates and uncovering arms depots. In the process, they killed at least 1,400 people. In many cases, they moved house to house, demanding to know the residents' sect, looting valuables, torching homes, and executing children, women, and men, including older people, often using overtly anti-Alawi slurs and rhetoric. In some cases, fighters wiped out entire families. The atrocities included acts of humiliating abuse, men forced to crawl and bark like dogs before being shot, and older detainees beaten on camera. Survivors describe multiple waves of armed men masked in military fatigues or civilian clothing, repeatedly sweeping through their homes and communities in Al-Sahab in Hama Governorate. A video shows the Ministry of Interior's General Secretary forces executing detainees at point-blank range. And it goes on and on. I mean, this is a gigantic report about just the horrifying abuses of the insurgent Al-Qaeda government that has now taken over Syria. So these minority populations that had been protected by Bashar al-Assad and his family for the last 70 years have all been eradicated now. And they've gone after Christians, and they've shut down, you know, Christian celebrations in the capital city of Syria. And none of this is an accident. None of it is unexpected by the people in power. Again, they just don't give a damn about democracy or whether you're a republic or a government. It doesn't matter to them. It genuinely does. What matters is, do you submit? What matters is, are you on our team or not? They are happy to welcome into the fold a literal terrorist presiding over the mass execution of minorities in their country because he's on their side, because he helps them with their overall global goals of creating a one world government. And then in order to do that, first and foremost, they've got to create the Greater Israel Project, since that will be the seat of the global government. That'll be the capital. And so all of that, everything that we've seen in the last 15 years in Syria is all in pursuit of that goal. Doesn't matter if Bashar al-Assad, he wasn't a murderous dictator. Not any more so than anybody else, and significantly less so than his replacement. So it's not about that. It's about greater geopolitical concerns, mostly having to do with disabling Iran, striking at the axis of resistance. That was the resistance between Iraq and Iran and Syria and Lebanon and Palestine and, you know, some aspects of Jordan. Cutting that off was the primary concern. And the way they thought to do that was, well, you got a bunch of radical Islamists, let's send them to war against Syria. We'll support the ISIS terrorists. We'll call them moderate rebels. We'll train them, arm them, and we'll actually also recruit them from Europe, where Saudi Arabia has sent a bunch of people, radicalize them, and then there'll be a source of manpower to go into the Middle East to try to kill the natives there. Completely and utterly cynical and vicious and brutal and evil. I guess evil is the word for it. But it's perfectly in line with, frankly, everything else America has done in the Middle East in the last couple of decades. So I went to Grok for this, because you won't find this reported really anywhere. And so I think Grok more or less has the right interpretation of this. Everywhere America has been involved overseas, in the Middle East in particular, has seen their Christian population decimated entirely. Every single time. Is this coincidence? Is this an accident? Or is this perhaps part of the intentions behind all of this? U.S. military involvement in these regions led to specific conflicts, the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the 2011 NATO-led intervention in Libya, U.S. operations against ISIS in Syria starting in 2014 amid the civil war that began in 2011, and for Palestine, referring to the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and Gaza. And basically, you've got Iraq here. Before the U.S. invasion, it had a Christian population of 1.5 million. After this, it is less than, it's about a quarter million, about a quarter million. So 1.5 million to a quarter million Christians in Iraq. In Syria, it's gone from 1.5 to 2.2 million down to less than half a million. Okay. Again, as a consequence directly of our intervention in their civil war, we sponsored ISIS. They went around killing Christians. In Libya, this happened as well. 60,000 Christians went down to 35,000 in Palestine. 50 to 70,000 Christians lived in Palestine, including 2,300 in Gaza alone. That's down to 35,000, including only 1,000 in Gaza. And of course, we noted this previously, where you've got Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House in America, going to the West Bank in Israel and saying, yeah, we're going to Judaize all of this. There should be nobody but Jews on this land. Well, for like 600 years, Bethlehem, the city where Jesus was born, was 85% Christian. Through literally 600 years of Islamic occupation, it was still 85% Christian in 1948 when Israel was founded. It's now down to 10%, okay, 85% to 10%, and Mike Johnson wants that 10% wiped off the map. Is this an accident? Again, is this an accident, or is this, you know, directly contributing to the reason why we are making these decisions as a nation? And it literally happens everywhere. Lebanon used to be a Christian country as late as the 1980s. It was a majority Christian country. Palestine used to have a very sizable Christian population. Of course, the churches are being bombed as we speak. In Syria, the Christians and the other, you know, not extremist minority Muslim populations are being eradicated. In Iraq, they were completely decimated and are barely even a remnant at this point when they were sizable and had a population of millions before this. I ask again, is this an accident? Is this a mistake? Or is this one of the reasons that we keep doing this over and over and over again? Yeah. Trump is still talking about babies getting their heads cut off. Okay. Great. Now, apparently Macron, I mean, France just recognized Palestine as a nation. Canada just recognized Palestine as a nation. I believe Italy did as well. We've got a lot of countries recognizing Palestine and sort of breaking with Israel. The EU just said they're no longer shipping weapons to Israel. I mean, you have to understand, this is the main conflict going on in the world right now. It's Israel's future being very insecure as they drive away all of their allies and therefore rely more and more on America to do their bidding, which in return is driving more and more Americans away from supporting Israel as we see that we're being used and we don't benefit from any of this. So what is the end conclusion of this feedback loop? It's either some sort of giant false flag attack that draws us into a war in the Middle East again, bombing Iran and or you know, false flagging an American ship to blame on Iran to get us into conflict there. It's got to be something big, because as the trajectory exists now, Israel is more or less slated for destruction in not very long period of time as more and more people withdraw support in America while the people that support you are dying out. So the young people don't want anything to do with it. This is an existential crisis for the leaders of Israel who, like in Mossad, they always plan 10 to 20 years ahead. And their plans are not secret and they're not good. Likud minister, Gaza will be unviable post-war. Palestinians will voluntarily migrate from West Bank too. The Minister of Innovation, Science and Technology, Gila Gamliel, spoke out about this on TV. She's from the Likud party. She said Gaza will be uninhabitable following the end of Israel's military operation against Gaza, saying Gaza will ultimately not be a viable habitation. The strip today already has no potential for viability. She goes on to promote her plan for the voluntary migration of Gazans. So they're going to be sending them to Europe and America, and then they'll do the same in the West Bank. And that's what their plan is. Some might call this genocide. Some might call this ethnic cleansing. In America, I guess we call this spreading democracy. I don't know. Have we come up with another term for that? That doesn't really work anymore. What are we saying it is now? Or we're not even offering an excuse. We're just going along with the genocide and telling everybody to shut up about it. Great. Great plan.
Fentanyl, the dragon left China and flew to hang out with Alex and try something new. He landed in Texas, they barbecued steaks, and after they ate, they cleaned the dishes and plates. Alex jumped on his back and they flew to the store to get some supplements that you can't ignore. He got Ultimate Life Force and Methylene Blue, then he paid with a war bond that was crispy and new.
Defense, your ultimate shield against the daily onslaught of toxins and globalist schemes. Stay alive and survive.
not solving the problems it should too often. It's actually creating new problems for us to solve. The best example is the number one political issue of our time, the crisis of uncontrolled migration. It's uncontrolled. Your countries are being ruined. The United Nations is funding an assault on Western countries and their borders. In 2024, the UN budgeted $372 million in cash assistance to support an estimated 624,000 migrants journeying into the United States. Think of that. The UN is supporting people that are illegally coming into the United States, and then we have to get them out. The UN also provided food, shelter, transportation, and debit cards to illegal aliens. Can you believe that? On the way to infiltrate our southern border. Millions of people came through that southern border. Just a year ago, millions and millions of people were pouring in, 25 million altogether over the 4 years of the incompetent Biden administration. And now we have it stopped, totally stopped. In fact, they're not even coming anymore because they know they can't get through. But what took place is totally unacceptable. The UN is supposed to stop invasions, not create them and not finance them. In the United States, we reject the idea that mass numbers of people from foreign lands can be permitted to travel halfway around the world, trample our borders, violate our sovereignty, cause unmitigated crime, and deplete our social safety net. We have reasserted that America belongs to the American people, and I encourage all countries to take their own stand in defense of their citizens as well. You have to do that because I see it. I'm not mentioning names. I see it, and I can call every single one of them out. You're destroying your countries. They're being destroyed. Europe is in serious trouble. They've been invaded by a force of illegal aliens like nobody's ever seen before. Illegal aliens are pouring into Europe. Nobody is ever, and nobody's doing anything to change it, to get them out. It's not sustainable. And because they choose to be politically correct, they're doing just absolutely nothing about it. And I have to say, I look at London where you have a terrible mayor, terrible, terrible mayor. And it's been so changed, so changed. Now they want to go to Sharia law, but you're in a different country. You can't do that. Both the immigration and their suicidal energy ideas will be the death of Western Europe if something is not done immediately. They cannot, this cannot be sustained. What makes the world so beautiful is that each country is unique. But to stay this way, every sovereign nation must have the right to control their own borders. You have the right to control your borders, as we do now, and to limit the sheer numbers of migrants entering their countries and paid for by the people of that nation that were there and that built that particular nation at the time. They put their blood, sweat, tears, money into that country, and now they're being ruined. Proud nations must be allowed to protect their communities and prevent their societies from being overwhelmed by people they have never seen before with different customs, religions, with different everything. Where migrants have violated laws, lodge false asylum claims or claimed refugee status for illegitimate reasons, they should, in many cases, be immediately sent home.
Yeah, most cases, I'd say. Again, that's Trump laying down the law and revealing that, I mean, we're basically at war with the UN is what he's really saying there. He's saying all of these problems created by mass immigration, the UN is funding them. The UN is organizing them. The UN is orchestrating it. And then the UN is passing speech laws to stop any of the people in these countries from speaking out against it. What are we doing here? What is the point of the existence of this organization? And it's, of course, completely on purpose. They actually published a white paper called Replacement Migration like 20 years ago, laying all of this out. We're essentially at war with the UN. But they just get to do whatever the hell they want, and we have to pay for it. It is beyond ridiculous. We have some breaking news out of Iran on the other side. Stay with us. Pretty big stuff. Pretty troubling stuff, actually.
Your body faces new challenges in a bioengineered world. That's why Alex Jones brings you Ultimate Life Force, a triple-action spike protein detox designed to help clear harmful toxins, support your cellular defenses, and restore full body recovery. Packed with powerful ingredients, Ultimate Life Force is formulated for strength, resilience, and renewal. Detox. Defend. Recover. Take control of your health with Alex Jones's Ultimate Life Force.
Fentanyl, the dragon left China and flew to hang out with Alex and try something new. He landed in Texas, they barbecued steaks, and after they ate, they cleaned the dishes and plates. Alex jumped on his back and they flew to the store to get some supplements that you can't ignore. He got Ultimate Life Force and Methylene Blue. Then he paid with a war bond that was crispy and new.
Front lines of the information battlefield. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. We were going to move away from some of the international stuff, but we just have some breaking news here from Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. He says this, quote, "Today we have reached an advanced level in uranium enrichment. While countries aiming to develop nuclear weapons enrich uranium up to 90%, we've limited ours at 60% because we have no need for such weapons and have intended to not pursue nuclear weapons." Tell you what, if I was an Iranian advisor, I'd say, let's not say this. Let's not advertise this. There's no reason for them to know this. We don't need to brag about this. Ayatollah, what are you trying to do here? Are you trying to get us bombed? Are you actually providing the very, psychological lever needed to get America into direct conflict with Iran? Are you trying to get us all killed? I don't understand why you would make this announcement. Exactly. It's very strange. Now, in other situations, America, of course, could be serving as the sort of go-between. Frankly, we don't have a dog in the fight over in the Middle East. They want us to think that we do, but in reality, we really don't. Not one that requires us to go to war with Iran, right? In fact, it'd actually be a lot better, safer, more intelligent for us to be friends with everybody in the region. And the only reason most of them don't like us is because of our senseless devotion to the murderous and genocidal state of Israel, who all of this is clearly, intended for. So why they'd write this, I don't know. But typically, America could play some sort of mitigating role in all of this. Unfortunately, they don't trust us anymore. In fact, there's a story today, I didn't even print it because I didn't know Iran would be making a statement like this anytime soon. But earlier today, there's a story of Iran basically rejecting direct talks with America. America wanted direct talks again with Iran to talk about, maybe a new nuclear deal or, figure out how to avoid the next big war that's obviously being planned for between Israel and Iran, with America being drawn in. Because of, the blackmail networks. But Iran doesn't want to talk to us anymore. But why should they? Iran's Khamenei rejects direct talk with U.S. over a nuclear program. Well, of course. Why would they trust us? Last time we were in talks, Israel started a war with them, and then we bombed their nuclear site in the middle of the night. When America and Qatar were trying to hold negotiations between Hamas and Israel, Israel assassinated all of them with a bomb. Do you understand how the actions of Israel have destroyed not just their reputation, but America's reputation, and in turn has severely limited America's ability to actually participate in a positive way in any of these developments? Nobody trusts us anymore. Why should they? Every time they enter into negotiations with us in apparently good faith, we let Israel bomb the crap out of them and kill all their leadership. And then we say it was our idea. Again, people think I have like a hard-on for Israel or something. Like I hate Israel. It's like, how can you not see that this is the obvious outcome? I care about America, and America has had our legs cut off because we constantly contribute to whatever insane evil Israel is perpetrating. So now we are not in the negotiations with Iran. They don't want anything to do with us. And they're advertising how enriched their uranium is. Gee, sure would be nice to be able to negotiate with them. Well, too bad. Every time we try to negotiate with anybody in the Middle East, our slave master Israel shoves a spike in their eye. Why would they ever want to talk to us again? It's just infuriating. So, okay, you know, I guess it's like, this is kind of what we've been saying forever. It doesn't matter that the people don't want it. It doesn't matter that nobody in America wants this. Nobody in Europe wants this. I just read the stories. Like, they recognize. They're like, yeah, nobody wants to go to war. They don't want to go to war with Russia. They don't want to go to war in Iran. Nobody wants this, but they're still doing it. They're just going to do it. And they're going to do whatever it takes to get people on board. And if that includes setting off a nuke in an American city, blame that on Russia. That's what they'll do. It doesn't matter to them whether you're for it or not. They're not asking permission. They're just doing it. Just like they do everything. Do you want your meat replaced with crickets? Obviously not, but they're doing that whether you like it or not. Do you want your kid being indoctrinated into leftist ideology in school? No? Well, you're a terrorist if you go talk to the school board about it. They're just doing it, and we just have to stop them. We just have to recognize the real scale of threat that we're under right now, that these people are not making idle threats. They have started and continue to perpetuate wars that have killed millions and millions of people already. They're doing it again, and they're trying desperately to do it again. And it's utterly infuriating. So despite the fact that we vote for the guy who says he's going to end the war, everything, you know, that the American people want, we want to end the war in Ukraine. We don't want to be enemies with Russia, and we don't want to be dragged into another war in the Middle East. But, like, these two battles are just going to perpetuate until we can get dragged into them. The people in power don't want peace. They're not going to let peace happen. They're going to make war happen. And they really are pursuing that with absolutely everything they've got. Which is why they're putting in all of the, censorship stuff around right now, too, because obviously when people have access to information and the ability to communicate with each other, we all decide, oh, we don't want war, do we? We're all on the same page, aren't we? We don't want war. They need to intercede and make sure that we're listening to mainstream voices that all universally do want war because they're all paid off psychopathic Satanists. So stick to InfoWars. We'll tell you the truth and oppose war in practically every one of its forms, unless, of course, it's war against the leftists in our own country who are already waging war against us, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But I guess it's sort of along the same line. I guess this is sort of along the same lines. We're talking a lot about free speech today and a major front for – okay, hold on. This is from today. This is a little bit later. Okay, so first he posts, we've enriched our uranium 60%. A few minutes later he posts this. Under current circumstances, negotiating with the U.S. government does nothing to serve our national interests because American side has already determined the negotiations outcome in advance, the shutdown of nuclear enrichment in Iran. This isn't negotiation, it's dictation. Yeah. Is he wrong? Is that a crazy position to have? No, we've shown it over and over again. They enter into discussions in good faith, and then we let Israel start a war with them and bomb all of their scientists. It's ridiculous. No honorable nation would accept negotiations under threats, and no wise politician would ever endorse that. Negotiating with the U.S. is severely detrimental. They've threatened if we don't negotiate, they'll do this and that. Accepting such negotiations means the Islamic Republic of Iran is susceptible to threats. It means we become frightened and surrender in the face of threats. So again, people act like opposing Israel's actions in the Middle East is, you know, she makes you a Hamas supporter. No, I want America to be free from the albatross of Israel around our neck. I want us to have freedom of action in the Middle East to pursue our own interest, not have our reputation repeatedly damaged because of our cooperation with this murderous cabal of international criminals they call the Israeli government. Why would they ever want to negotiate with us? And I think that's all on purpose too. Obviously, the Israelis don't want us negotiating with Iran. Which again, I think most of this, when it comes to Trump, I think most of it is going on without his control, outside of his power, and he feels like the most, you know, responsible thing for him to do is to take credit for stuff rather than look like an impotent fool being rolled over by a much, much smaller country. And I think that's true in Ukraine. I think it's true in Iran and Qatar and all these places. Every time it's like, oh, we're going to war with Iran. He's like, actually, I told them to do that. That was my idea. It's like, okay, well, then you're taking credit for betraying Iran. You're taking credit for destroying negotiations. Remember, it was a day before we were set to negotiate with Iran that Israel launched its big attack against Iran and destroyed our ability to communicate with them. And it was Trump's response to say, yeah, that was actually my idea. And it's like, so you're the evil jackass that did this? Like, why would you take credit for that? It obviously wasn't your idea. You wanted to negotiate with him tomorrow. But he's taking credit for it, just like I think they have decided there's nothing he can do to stop the war in Ukraine. So he's like, all right, might as well own it. I think it's absurd. I think it's completely absurd. So, again, we just pray for peace. But obviously the people in power don't want peace and are doing everything they can to really maximize, you know, these two flashpoints. Iran and Ukraine, just horrifying. All right, but we do have some good news. We have some good news in the domestic war for free speech. From Infowars.com, DOJ Task Force on Government Weaponization Against the American People launches investigation into Democrat Party and the FBI for directing illegal lawfare against Alex Jones and Infowars. This is years in the making, folks. This is what so much of your contributions to the info war at thealexjonesstore.com has led to. This is what the fight in the courts is eventually, you know, this is going to be the pinnacle. This is going to be the ultimate outcome. And this is a very scary letter for the lawyers involved in trying to sue InfoWars out of existence to receive from U.S. Attorney Ed Martin. Top DOJ attorney group Ed Martin Jr. is investigating the federal government's Democrat-led lawfare against InfoWars founder Alex Jones. Writing to attorney Christopher Matei of Koskoff and Beter earlier this month, Martin requested information about Matei's client FBI Special Agent William Aldenberg and his role in the Sandy Hook lawsuit against Jones. Martin wrote, I'm writing to request this information from you regarding your client, FBI Special Agent William Aldenberg, and his role in certain litigation that may benefit him personally and that may impact our citizens and our legal system. As you may know, there are criminal laws protecting citizens from actions by government employees who may be acting for personal benefit. I encourage you to review those. Martin asked Matei to answer the following questions. One, did Special Agent Alden reveal any financial benefit that might accrue to him as he led litigation and recruited other plaintiffs? Did he do so before or after public proceedings and filings? When he testified in the Jones case, did he make clear the testimony was in his personal capacity? Beyond stating so in court and other proceedings, did he take actions to protect the citizens? At what point did Special Agent Aldenberg recuse himself from matters in his work to protect himself and others from conflict? Finally, it recently came to my attention that one of the vendors, named Berlin Rosen, stated that they were leaders in newsjacking and may have assisted in the Jones cases. Do you or your clients have a relationship with Berlin Rosen? Do you know how they achieved, quote, newsjacking? So this is a very big deal. So this is a very, very interesting set of questions. Now, most of this is centered around the bizarre fact of this case that there was an FBI agent at the center of it all, and he was the one that apparently recruited the other people to start this whole, defamation case against Alex Jones. Alex Jones had never mentioned this FBI agent, never said his name, never heard of him until he sued. And he was one of the people rewarded like tens of millions of dollars from Alex Jones. We never even mentioned the guy. Totally absurd. And then, of course, we have like Project Veritas on hidden camera from the CIA and the FBI talking about, oh, yeah, we were running a program to try to take down Alex Jones through Sandy Hook. We're going to go after his money to silence him. So the case against Alex Jones, again, they think they're clever. They really think they're clever. And they think that by going after Alex, they're going to set a precedent because they don't think people will defend Alex because of how severely they've damaged his reputation through their lies in the mainstream media. The thing they don't understand is that Alex Jones has been prepared for this fight. InfoWars has been prepared for this fight for a very long time. First, they thought they'd set the precedent by kicking us off the internet, thinking that that would destroy us. And it did a lot of damage, folks. You know, we were making something like $30,000 a month from YouTube alone when they kicked us off. I guarantee you they're sitting around popping the champagne going, we kicked them off. By this time next month, InfoWars will be a thing of the past. We've severed their funding. How could they survive? Not knowing that a long time ago, Alex Jones saw this reality manifesting and created the InfoWars store so that our audience could support us regardless of what advertisers thought about it or platforms kept us on. So we survived that attack. We survived the 2018 mass deplatforming, which I think has completely changed their tactics. I think they would have done that to a lot more people if it had worked with us. Right? Think about how important this is. They do this to us, expecting us to go down, expecting to set a precedent with us going, and expecting to sort of set a game plan in place to go, all right, we'll do this against Alex Jones. And when it works, we'll do it against everybody else. But then it doesn't work. So they have to change plans. They go, oh crap. He only got more powerful. Oh, he created his own platform and people are going there. Shoot. What do we do next? And what they did next was launch the Sandy Hook lawsuits. And they expected that to work. They expected us to go down for that. And they had to cheat and lie and manipulate the entire proceedings, in my personal opinion. And then they cheated in the auction. I mean, they're just unrepentant criminals. And absolutely everything they do is just soaked and dripping in malfeasance and manipulation. So it doesn't work because InfoWars knows what they're up to and our audience sees the tactics that they're pursuing and helps us to fight them back. So we're setting precedents in the opposite direction here. We're setting precedents that say you can't do this to a media outlet, that that's not the proper use of the American legal system, that we do have a First Amendment right. And even if we're banned by the judge from referencing that fact in testimony, it still does exist. We can still use it. And there are still good people in the government who are able to see what a gigantic conspiracy of fraud that this truly represents. So Ed Martin is now going after them. And we'll see what comes from this. This is a very big deal. That's official DOJ letterhead being sent very simple questions, which you know Chris Mattei is pooping himself over, which is just fantastic. It's just wonderful. NewRepublic.com, Trump's DOJ is now going to war for Alex Jones. Well, for justice. Well, they're going to war for, you know, justice for anybody in America that might be subject to this harassment and, you know, legal manipulation. Yeah, they're going to war for truth and reality. They're going to war for a citizen of America who's been unfairly dragged over the coals with a giant tens of million dollar funded conspiracy to try to steal his voice as admitted by the very people doing it. But yeah, say he's going to war for Alex Jones. Sure, if that makes you feel good. The Justice Department is going to bat for Alex Jones, the Sandy Hook conspiracy theorist who has still yet to pay the $1.3 billion to the victims' families. Well, he still hasn't paid that off. Gee, what's taking him so long? Ridiculous. It's going to the Supreme Court, by the way. I have the feeling this will all be overturned. A DOJ letter signed by U.S. Pardon Attorney Ed Martin and shared publicly by Jones pledges the agency's intent to investigate retired Special Agent William Aldenburg, who testified in Sandy Hook family's joint defamation case against the InfoWars host. Aldenburg was one of the first responders to the elementary school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012. Martin accuses Aldenburg of acting for personal benefit by participating in the trial, which effectively bankrupted Jones and awarded Aldenburg $90 million. As you know, there are criminal laws protecting the citizens from actions by government employees who may be acting for personal benefit. I encourage you to review those, he said very subtly. The specific request made by the DOJ pertaining to Aldenburg's participation refer to his employment at the FBI, whether he made clear that his testimony was made in a personal capacity, and whether he recused himself from certain cases due to potential conflict of interest, and whether Aldenburg had a relationship with communication firm Berlin Rosen for purposes related to newsjacking, which the letter did not define. In his own statement, Jones claimed that the DOJ's Task Force on Government Weaponization of the American People has launched an investigation into the Democrat Party FBI-directed illegal lawfare against Alex Jones and InfoWars. Jones reported $9 million in personal assets in 2024 bankruptcy filing, while InfoWars parent company Free Speech held $6 million in cash, roughly $1.2 million worth of inventory, according to the Associated Press. The company was later auctioned off, with the satirical newspaper The Onion temporarily coming out on top as its next potential owner. Yeah, but why don't they own us? well, wait, if they won the auction, shouldn't I work for The Onion right now? Well, wait a second. What happened there? Oh, it was replete with fraud. Oh, the entire thing was a gigantic hoax that involved high-powered lawyers basically manipulating a sort of small-time Texas bankruptcy adjudicator. Hmm, interesting. I mean, if they won the election, you think won the auction, you think that that would be borne out in proceedings following that. But no, it was stopped and reversed because of, as the judge said, it was totally inappropriate the way the whole thing was carried out. They don't report that for some reason, but of course it's absolutely true. And it's very good to see Chris Mattei probably scrambling behind the scenes, because you know something about lawyers. During court, they never ask a question they don't know the answer to, right? You don't put a witness up on the case and then actually ask them something you don't know the answer to. You guide them to the answer that you know is true in order to make the case that you already have planned out. Same thing applies here. When Ed Martin is asking these questions, he knows the answer. He absolutely knows the answer. You think he's going to rely on Chris Mattei to tell him if, you know, what Special Agent Aldenberg testified in the Jones case? No, he went and watched the testimony, saw that he did not make clear that he was acting in a personal capacity and not in his office as an FBI agent, because that testimony is available on YouTube and you can watch it. If he had that question, he would just watch the video. He's asking the question because he knows the answer to the question. The answer to the question is no, Aldenberg did not make clear that he was acting in his personal capacity. So just like lawyers never ask a witness a question they don't know the answer to, Ed Martin knows the answer to all of these questions, which is why he's asking them. Thank you for supporting us at thealexjonesstore.com. Thank you for leading the charge and contributing to this movement that is primed and ready and actually making major moves in destroying the networks of influence and corruption that are actually destroying our First Amendment. And of course, all of this is just maximized and made all the more important because of the absurd claims happening right now about Jimmy Kimmel and free speech in general and, you know, where this goes, and the Democrats saying, well, you better be careful because whatever you do, the Democrats are going to do to you next. And it's like, you already tried to destroy us. You have failed. Not because you don't have the resources. You've got more resources than anybody. But because you're wrong, because you're liars, because what you're doing is not legal and not an appropriate use of the legal system. So we will defeat you with the truth and justice and reality. But on the topic of free speech and censorship, another major one. Again, this is all in context of Jimmy Kimmel, after a high-profile assassination, lying about the assassination and, you know, contributing with his national talk show to the violent atmosphere currently embroiling and putting all of America at threat. And he, you know, of course, his own company takes him out, makes him go on a little, you know, 3-day vacation. Everybody freaks out and says, this is horrible. How could they do this? Free speech is at threat. Apparently they forgot that free speech has been dead in this country for a decade. YouTube says it will bring back creators wrongfully banned for political speech during Biden regime pressure campaign. Story from Infowars.com. And the statement here is from the House Judiciary GOP. Google admits censorship under Biden, promises to end bans of YouTube accounts for thousands of Americans censored for political speech. So we'll pick this up on the other side. Shout out to Jim Jordan for getting this admission in reversal. Does that mean that we're going to get our YouTube channel back? Gee, that would be devastating for the bad guys, wouldn't it? We're back on YouTube, counteracting their ridiculous propaganda. Gee, that could be really the final nail in their coffin, couldn't it?
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it.
and it was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West Awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West Awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, the West Awakens with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen. Get them now at theyellowstonestore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store, apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense, me and Biz, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got War Bonds. That's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100. It's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, it's like being Amazon Prime. You get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time. Get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our methylene blue. You are crazy if you don't get our Ultimate Life Force Blood Detox. It's all there at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You can follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. We got a lot more stories covered in the second half of today's program. I am going to open up the phones for your calls. I'll do that. I'll go ahead and do that right now, actually. I'll go ahead and open up the phone lines for your calls, but I'll probably start taking them in the next hour. But if you want to call in, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. We'll take your calls in the final hour of today's program. We do have some breaking news, more discussions at the UN. Trump is in a meeting with a bunch of leaders in the Middle East, saying that they're going to solve the Gaza war today. So that would be nice. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be great? I'm not holding my breath, but there's video coming out of that. I'll show you in just a second. But I got other stuff to talk about when it comes to free speech and its rapid eradication across the West. Rather, it was eradicated, and it's sort of fighting to come back. Let's go to that video. This is breaking news. This was about an hour ago. Trump met with the Arab leaders, and here's what he had to say about moving forward with the war in the Middle East.
I'm going to make this an important meeting. Right?
So this is going to be a very important meeting. It's going to be a meeting with great leaders from a very important part of our planet, the Middle East. And we want to end the war in Gaza. We're going to end it. We're going to end it. Maybe we can end it right now. But
wouldn't that be something? I hope you do, Trump. Godspeed. There he was sitting next to Erdogan, the Arab leadership summit there at the UN, with Trump saying, we're going to end the war in Gaza. Maybe we can end it right now. Well, yeah, I mean, we could stop sending them weapons. That would end it. That'd be very easy. Remember, like, everything that we do is just so Israel can, like, just keep killing Gazans. Like, that's the thing that's happening. It's not like we stop sending them weapons, they get destroyed. Like, Gaza's flattened. There's no threat there anymore for Israel. There really isn't. Maybe in like a decade, if they can rebuild, maybe there will be, but there's no threat. It's just the ethnic cleansing at this point that we are suicidally dedicated towards. So Godspeed to Trump. Please, for the love of God, end the war in Gaza. And you can do it by flipping a switch. There's a meme I saw yesterday because I was talking about the ease with which we could solve basically every problem in the world, especially the ones facing us in America, as Trump was saying in his speech to the UN. These were all created problems on purpose by groups of people who are putting these programs in place. We can just stop doing them. Oh, you want to, you know, stop all the problems that come about because of migration? Well, then re-migration. Just send them home and close your border. Problem solved. Look, I'm a genius. Crime? Hey, I know. Put the criminals in prison. I did it again. Wow. I deserve a Nobel Prize. I solved the problem of crime in this country. Most government propaganda at this point is just out there trying desperately to convince you not to go with the easy and obvious solutions by claiming that they're either too expensive, too hard, or somehow immoral. But they're not, which is why they hate somebody like Nayib Bukele, who just does the necessary things to stop the murder in his country, and it works. They really, really hate the example of just how easy and effective that solution is. But getting back to what we were talking about at the end of the last segment, Google admits censorship under Biden, promises to end bans of YouTube accounts for thousands of Americans censored for political speech. Thanks today to the oversight of chairman Jim Jordan, Google commits to offer all creators previously kicked off YouTube due to political speech violations on topics such as COVID-19 and elections an opportunity to return to the platform. Google also admitted the following to the House Judiciary Committee. The Biden administration pressured Google to censor Americans and remove content that did not violate YouTube's policies. The Biden administration's censorship pressure was unacceptable and wrong. Public debate should never come at the expense of relying on authorities. The company will never use third-party fact checkers. Europe's censorship laws target American companies and threaten American speech, including the removal of lawful content. These major admissions come after Chairman Jim Jordan's subpoena to Google and a years-long investigation into the company. I wonder what price they'll pay for this. Because I think in a lot of ways this was a betrayal by Google. After all, if when the Biden administration came to them and requested they remove somebody who had not actually violated their rules, they could have said no. And they should have said no. In that case, it would have been up to the Biden administration to try to pressure them somehow, maybe subpoena them or come up with a lawful order to take something down. But in that case, it, you know, would have given Google the position to go, hey, we're being pressured by this government. This is illegal. What are we going to do about this? But instead, they just went along with it. Biden said, hey, can you take this thing down? And Google said, yeah, no problem. Sure thing. Our pleasure, in fact. We were going to do it anyway. So they're working hand in hand. They are one in the same, largely. In fact, so many of the big tech companies have government agents embedded there. And we've gone over this over and over, where it's like, they'll write articles. It's like the CIA to Facebook pipeline. And it's all these CIA agents who get jobs in Facebook. And they're still CIA agents, by the way. Former CIA, now head of the Trust and Safety Commission. Okay, you are implanting government agents to do your will. All of this is exposed with the Twitter files. We've known this forever. Again, it's absurd even having to discuss censorship and free speech as if it's anything other than an established program by the left seeking to crush speech on the right. I mean, this is just endless. Facebook using ex-CIA to decide misinformation policy is very, very worrying. Yeah. Again, it truly is baffling. just the world that we're in right now. None of it makes any sense. So yeah, they're admitting this again. So what is the punishment that they're going to receive? They just have to let right wingers back on. Okay, that's good, I guess. I'd like to see more. YouTube admits to having censored people during COVID pandemic and the political and for political reasons. Offers terminated creators the opportunity to rejoin the platform. Offers terminated creators. Oh, they're offering the terminated creators an opportunity to rejoin. So this is part of the full breakdown of what's happening, not just the bullet points I read you. The company terminated channels for repeated violations of its community guidelines on elections integrity content through 2023 and COVID-19 content through 2024. Today, YouTube's community guidelines allow for a wider range of content regarding COVID-19 and elections integrity, reflecting the company's commitment to free speech, I'm sure. Now that it doesn't matter, now we stole the election and then we silenced anybody from providing evidence of that or talking about it at all. But that was like 4 years ago. So now we totally love free speech again. Former CIA officer quit Facebook elections integrity job after only 6 months, says company exploits our data. I'm telling you, there's a total unity between the intelligence agencies, international intelligence agencies, and the big tech companies. YouTube values conservative voices on its platform and recognizes that these creators have extensive reach and play an important role in civic discourse. The company recognizes these creators are among those shaping today's online consumption, landing must-watch interviews, giving viewers the chance to hear directly from politicians, celebrities, business leaders, and more. Well, that was the case back in 2023, too. So what are you saying? Again, it's good to see, and it's total proof, but it's not going to convince anybody who thinks that the right wing censors people because Jimmy Kimmel gets fired for downplaying a political assassination. It's all absurd. It's all just completely and utterly absurd. You can read all about the absurdity at InfoWars. YouTube says it will bring back creators wrongfully banned for political speech during Biden's regime pressure campaign. So the Biden regime actively leaning on YouTube to silence people. And it's like if you're listening to the Gavin McGinnis interview with Alex today, it's like, maybe we should just be doing that. I mean, can we not just lean on YouTube to silence all the leftist creators? Seems like we should. Seems like maybe we should. But no, we're the moral ones, and apparently we have to be. That's not stopping the bad guys. The people, who have been continually putting pressure on social media to silence voices that they don't like are really just ramping up their pressure campaigns. Of course, more and more things are being implemented in Europe, digital ID, framing it on protecting children from inappropriate material. And then they're just like, okay, scan your iris now, sir. It's just, this is all retarded. It's all just lies. They just don't want you speaking out against, the war that they're trying to start, or tell the truth about their insane programs that have crippled millions of people. Through things like Tylenol and vaccines, rendering them autistic. I mean, they don't want you talking about that, so they're silencing you. Let's go now to clip number 11. This is a very important video. Wall Street Apes reposted it. The day Charlie Kirk was killed, everyone was focused on that, and Gavin Newsom and the California Democrats rammed through an online censorship bill that just straight up makes certain speech illegal. Let's watch.
In the middle of all of this, something else happened around free speech, something nobody seems to be talking about, happening in the background while none of us are paying attention. The bluest state in the country, California, just passed the most censorious bill ever to be introduced in this country, SB 771, passing the assembly on September 10th, 10 days ago, then on September 16th, passing the Senate completely under our noses, which means right now all that stands between complete statewide government censorship is Gavin Newsom's signature. Now, am I exaggerating about how bad this bill is? No, I am not. Here is the actual bill. You can pull this up yourself on the state's website. The bill is called SB 771. It's called Personal Rights Liability Social Media Platforms. In Section 2, Title 23 of the bill, it defines the penalties for breaking this new California law. If you post something on social media, anywhere online, that the state of California deems to be hateful, there's a penalty for that reckless violation, a civil penalty of up to $500,000. For an intentional, knowing, or willful violation, a civil penalty of up to $1 million. That is the definition of the state controlling speech, folks, not what Trump just did. We don't like what the FCC chairman happened to say on Benny Johnson's show, but there's a huge difference between that and real government censorship. And what type of speech is California trying to police here? Well, let's read from the bill. It says, this bill protects against online harassment, particularly when directed at historically marginalized groups. Which means what? If you were to, I don't know, point out who the Kavanaugh assassin is, which we all just learned about this morning in this new court filing, if you were to say who that person is, would you be fined $500,000? Pretty frightening. All of this happening in the midst of the media and Democrats, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, making hay out of Trump trying to attack the First Amendment. Meanwhile, the state of California is actively passing UK-style laws that will fine you for saying the wrong thing. Pretty wild. And this bill is completely done, folks. It's passed in the House. It's passed in the Senate. All that's left is Gavin Newsom signing it into law.
It really is completely insane. The penalties, if you post something on social media anywhere online that state of California deems to be hateful, there's a penalty for that reckless violation, a civil penalty of up to $500,000. For an intentional, knowing, or willful violation, the civil penalty of up to $1 million. So they now have, lacking only Gavin Newsom's signature, and gee, I wonder if Gavin Newsom is going to stand up as a free speech champion and stop this from going through. Do we think, what do we think the likelihood of that is? Maybe less than zero. In section 2, title 23 of the bill, it defines the penalties if you post something on social media anywhere online that the state of California decides is hateful against a minority group or whatever they, whatever phrase they say, unrepresented, whatever they say. Basically, everybody except for white Christian men. That's what it means. It means everybody except for white Christian men cannot be insulted any longer, cannot be spoken against. Even if what you say is perfectly reasonable or like factually true, it might be insulting. It might be deemed hateful. Facts can be hateful, obviously. We know that. We've been told it over and over. What type of speech is California trying to police here? Well, let's read from the bill. It says, the bill protects against online harassment, particularly when directed at historically marginalized groups. You know, people have been kicked off. I can't remember who it was. It was like Alex Stein, maybe, or Revenge of the Sis. One of them got kicked off YouTube for bullying and harassment. The person they were bullying and harassing, Jeffrey Epstein. Literally. They made a video about Jeffrey Epstein. I think it was Alex Stein, if I'm not mistaken. Somebody was just posting about this. Made a video insulting Jeffrey Epstein after he was dead, and they kicked him off YouTube because he was harassing a minority group. It's anti-Semitism. You can get kicked off YouTube for bullying renowned pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Incredible. The state of California is actively passing UK-style laws that will fine you for saying the wrong thing. Pretty wild. And this bill is completely done. All that it needs is Gavin Newsom's signature. It literally is the state controlling the speech, and it's, you know, California, of course, and you can read the full bill, SB 771, personal rights, liability, social media platforms, and it lays all of this out. Completely outrageous. Now, this story is getting a lot of attention, but I think it deserves more. It broke earlier today and is being associated with the gathering of world leaders in the UN, at the UN in New York. Secret Service dismantles weaponized SIM farms designed to shut down NYC cell networks. Hours before President Donald Trump's address to the UN General Assembly, U.S. Secret Service announced it had dismantled a massive decentralized SIM farm network just 35 miles from New York City, hidden inside five abandoned apartment buildings. The telecommunications stealth weapon was capable of paralyzing regional cell networks through denial of service attacks. Let's see if the crew can find pictures of this so you can see what this is. It's basically racks and racks and racks of cell phones all tied into the same sort of control grid, meaning they can absolutely overwhelm the entire cellular network for the city of New York. Shut it down. Completely overwhelm and destroy it for at least a period of time, which seems to me to hint that this was just the preparation of a much, much larger attack. Now, one thing I heard, and this story doesn't have it. I don't know if this came out later, but apparently they found this as a result of tracking down some of the high profile swatting attacks that have happened. Again, that's just rumor and it doesn't say it in this story. So I don't know, maybe the crew can find an updated story to this. But what I heard was that they were investigating these swatting attacks that have hit everybody in the, you know, right wing, including politicians like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And in tracking that down, it led them to this hub where you've got, I mean, think about what we're seeing here. Bring up the pictures again. We're talking about a very, very well-funded operation here. Okay? Abandoned apartment buildings filled with racks and racks of servers and basically cell phone clones, you know, IP addresses, SIM cards. CBS News described the seizure as the largest of its kind, noting the network was scattered across abandoned apartment buildings at more than five sites, roughly 35 miles from New York City. They seized 300 SIM servers, SIM servers, and 100,000 SIM cards across multiple states. Sites, rather. So five sites, 100,000 SIM cards, meaning they can mimic the traffic of 100,000 cell phones. Now, if you've ever been to a big gathering, a big protest, a big march, you know, I'm thinking like actually in New York City, one of the first times I saw it was at the Women's March in New York City, and there are so many people that you can't get a cell phone signal. Once you get to a certain amount of people in a single area, it's hard to get a signal through, meaning that they could launch this attack and completely wipe out communications for New York City, more or less. So who's behind this? Who funded this? Who did this? This is an operation. This is not one person. This is not 10 people. This is like a state. This is a foreign state doing this to us. In fact, they say that in the article. They say a foreign state. Now, if it's certain states, they say the name of the state. If it's not Iran or Venezuela or one of the other predetermined enemies of America, if it wasn't Russia, then they just say it was a foreign state. Right? If this was Iran, if this was Russia, that's what they would say. They'd say this is connected to Russia. They wouldn't say connected to a foreign state. When they say it's connected to a foreign state, it's because that state is an ally of ours. I wonder who it could be. These devices enabled anonymous threats, encrypted communications, and could launch telecom attacks such as disabling cell towers, denial of service attacks, secure communications for criminal enterprises. Early analysis shows links between nation-state actors and known criminals. They described the seizure as the largest of its kind. Five sites, 100,000 SIM cards. The network had the potential to disable cell phone towers and essentially shut down the cellular network in New York City, Secret Service Special Agent in charge, Matt McCool, said in a statement released in the report by the agency. Beyond DDoS attacks, SIM farms could support psychological warfare operations such as mass disinformation campaigns, emergency false alerts, e.g. fake evacuation texts. CBS, citing multiple officials briefed on the probe, reported that early findings suggest the network was used for communications between foreign governments and individuals already known to U.S. law enforcement. In our view, the likelihood of this being part of a larger threat vector for potential physical terrorism appears elevated. Consider this. Disrupting communications in tandem with a physical attack could be the playbook for foreign adversaries or perhaps even the globalist cabal. And combine this with the statements made by people that I think are still working with the CIA or other intelligence agencies. There's people out there saying there's a big terrorist attack coming. They're going to, you know, target cities for an attack, but then they're also going to be hiding as first responders in the hospitals for a second wave of attacks for the victims that, you know, are sent to the hospital. And this has been, they've been spreading this idea for about a year. It's cropped up a little bit more in the last few days. And combined with this, I think that, you know, a major false flag attack may have been foiled today. Who set this up? Who funded it? Who are the known criminals that are apparently walking around in America, known to law enforcement, but not under arrest and apparently not being surveilled to any extent that would reveal their participation in the setup of this very disturbing, technological weapon that they discovered? It seems like one of the, so they can either be operating tons of, you know, 100,000 or more Twitter accounts, you know, using AI to post things, making it look like real people, and understand how thorough their deceit could be. With AI, it's a simple matter. You get a SIM card, so it has a unique IP address, and it can create social media. It can create the images that go on that social media. It can create other social media accounts that talk to each other, so it looks like, wow, these people have to be real. They're in communication. Maybe the two robots are both saying, it was great seeing you at the picnic last Sunday. Yeah, wasn't that fun? I still haven't found the ball I lost. Like, but they're just, it's just AI communicating with each other. But anybody investigating would go, oh, this has to be a person. Look, they have pictures at a picnic with somebody else that they're talking about. Well, everything in that, it can just be entirely fabricated. So it could be running a major disinformation campaign. That would be very useful to them. The foreign actors apparently involved in this, who I think are probably our allies. In fact, I'm almost certain of that. It's like when the assassin, the first attempted Trump assassin, Crooks, Thomas Crooks, remember they said then they were in contact with foreign governments. And I said immediately, okay, well, it's not Iran. It's not Russia. Turned out to be Belgium, I think, was one of the countries he had contact with. But yeah, if it's an ally, they say a foreign state is involved. If it's Russia or Iran or Venezuela or Cuba, they'll say that. So it seems like somebody spent a lot of money. I wonder if they bought the apartment buildings. Like, we need some follow-up on this. We need to know what these things were being used for. We need to know what the intentions of them were, who paid for them, who implanted them, who owns the apartment buildings, what these, you know, if they were online posting things as part of a disinformation campaign, who were they? What were they saying? What narratives were they boosting? Or if this was all in preparation to wipe out the New York cellular system to contribute to a, you know, wider false flag attack, we need to know that. This is incredibly disturbing. Again, this is like, in a lot of ways, more, you know, important than, you know, finding some, you know, trailer full of meth-addled scumbags who, like, are kidnapping kids. Like, that's horrible, and that's, like, you know, worse on the humanitarian level. But in terms of, like, what this implies, what this means, what it required, like, what contributions were required to build this weapon system, this is extremely troubling. And I really hope that this is not the last we hear of this story. We're going to need to follow this one. We're going to need to demand answers about this one. I don't know if the crew's been able to find it. I would like to know if this was part of the swatting investigation. Because I haven't seen anything from the swatting investigation, but if they're pursuing leads, it could very easily lead to a situation like this, a weapon system like this. By the way, speaking of the Trump assassination attempts, the second attempt, Ryan Routh, found guilty today and then tried to kill himself with a pin in the courtroom. Because that's the left. Because, oh, by the way, this is just what the left does. This is who the left is. All this discussion about, you know, violence, whether it's right or left. By the way, one of the many assassins just got, you know, convicted and tried to kill himself. That's who your side is.
Oh, here it is. Bovine Colostrum Plus. This is what I was looking for. This is the only thing that works on a monstrous stomach like mine. If it works for me, it will work for you. Order yours at the website below.
Charging into a goblin's nest. Goblin vomit.
Secret shoreline mission to handpick nature's vitamin-packed sea moss before the globalists patent it. He's scooping it up like it's Cyber Monday in the supplement aisle. But suddenly, A 20-foot-tall sea moss mutant erupts from the tide pool like Godzilla. Alex dashes like he just saw a new Fauci vaccine. Will he make it or become the monster's meal? To be continued.
Hello, my name is Matt McCool, and I'm the special agent in charge of the Secret Service New York field office. We are making this announcement as a matter of public interest given timing, amount, and concentration of material recovered during a recent Secret Service protective intelligence investigation. Following multiple telecommunications-related imminent threats directed towards senior U.S. government officials this spring, the U.S. Secret Service began a protective intelligence investigation to determine the extent and impact these threats could have on protective operations. This was a difficult and complex effort to identify the source of these fraudulent calls and the impact on the Secret Service protective mission. During this period, we leveraged technical assistance and support of federal partners, including Homeland Security Investigations, the Department of Justice, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We also received phenomenal support from our state and local law enforcement partners, to include the NYPD. The investigation led us to the New York tri-state area, where investigators discovered tens of thousands of co-located and networked cellular devices capable of carrying out nefarious telecommunications attacks. These devices allowed anonymous encrypted communications between potential threat actors and criminal enterprises, enabling criminal organizations to operate undetected. This network had the potential to disable cell phone towers and essentially shut down the cellular network in New York City. These devices were concentrated within 35 miles of the global meeting of the United Nations General Assembly now underway in New York City. Given the timing, location, and proximity and potential for significant disruptions to the New York telecom system, we moved quickly to disrupt this network. To be clear, these recovered devices no longer pose a threat to the New York tri-state area. We will continue working towards identifying those responsible and their intent, including whether their plan was to disrupt the UN General Assembly and communications of government and emergency personnel during the official visit of world leaders in and around New York City. Forensic examinations of the equivalent of 100,000 cell phones worth of data is underway. Early analysis indicates cellular communications between foreign actors and individuals that are known to federal law enforcement. Given the sensitivity and complexity of this investigation, we are not able to go into specifics at this time. This is an open and active investigation, and we have no arrest to announce today. Rather, this announcement is designed to safeguard critical infrastructure and responsibly provide the public what we can at this time. The Secret Service will continue to run down all leads until we fully understand the intent of the operation and identify those responsible.
So again, no arrest. I'm very interested to see where this case goes. Like I said, you need technical expertise. You need money. You probably need cooperation with American authorities, if I had to guess, to carry off something like that. And this is ahead of a bunch of planned violence from the left anyway, as well as a bunch of signals coming from the narrative makers preparing us for a big attack from a bunch of Islamists behind enemy lines here in our country. I think we're being set up for a major false flag, and I think this may have delayed that at least a little bit, but we'll have to wait for some further developments there. Now, I'm going to go out to your phone calls this hour, but I still got a lot to talk about, including what's happening with autism and the incredible press conference from Trump yesterday that I think most people don't appreciate how skillfully he is waging this war against the pharmaceutical industry. And we got a lot of politics to talk about as well, Antifa being declared a terrorist organization. And that we've been, you know, warning you about this for a while at InfoWars. You remember how the Tesla protests were all old people? Most people laughed at that, and they pointed at that and said, gee, why is nothing but boomers out there protesting Tesla? This is kind of weird, isn't it? Usually you got these young radicals out there. Most people laughed at this. It was probably only InfoWars that told you that's because the young people are going underground. They're getting more radical, and they're not participating in protests. They're planning for direct action. We're going to see that come to fruition here. We'll be right back.
Navigating the maze of mainstream narratives, Harrison Smith finds the hidden paths in the war room.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the war room is on. We'll go out to your phone calls momentarily. But this video has gone pretty viral today. It's a protest, an anti-Trump protest that, just like most anti-Trump protests we've seen since his second administration began, it is just a bunch of old, whacked-out boomers thinking that they're reliving the 1960s in their acid-addled mind. Let's go to clip 30 here. Old woman wearing a Be Kind shirt tries desperately and frantically to decapitate an effigy of Donald Trump. Let's watch. There's the pinata, and there's the old lady, who in any other situation would look like just a sweet old grandma, but no, here she is venting her anger at Orange Man Bad. And it's just weird, honestly. It's just like, are you somebody's grandmother? Like, what is this about? Why are all the leftist protests just a bunch of geriatric weirdos? What is happening here? But of course, we've told you since the protests against Tesla happened, and it was all a bunch of old people, that's because the old people still sort of, they think it's the 60s, and they think, like, we're going to go out and protest. The young people, it's not that they've given up. It's not that they, you know, just don't care anymore. The people that used to go to protests have decided that didn't work. We're going to have to go underground and become terrorists. And they've all gone underground. And we've been reporting on this pretty steadily. I did on American Journal. I've also talked about it on Moonbase quite a bit. Because we've actually, you know, shares, I should have grabbed the video, but like months ago, we were showing all of these Telegram groups, and they were all hinting that they were going to be involved in violence. And there's people going, protesting isn't enough. We need direct action. And then you see a comment from the moderator going, well, we have things planned, but we reserve that for our private chat. Let's keep things on the lowdown, public facing. And so you've got these Telegram groups or WhatsApp groups or signal groups where in public they talk about protesting, they sort of coordinate a little bit what they're doing, but you can read between the lines and see that, oh, they're organizing in secret. And they'll actually have private Telegram groups, and they'll set it up to where you have to have a video interview with the people in the group so they can identify you and verify that you're actually on their side before they ever let you in to the group where they're actually planning the violence. And we've been reporting on this, and this is what's actually been happening. So the reason you don't see young people at these protests anymore is because the young people have given up on protests. They are all going underground. If you're a radical leftist, you're not out there protesting. You're in a signal group planning violent attacks against law enforcement. So I'm glad we're taking this seriously finally, and I'm glad we're apparently actually getting on this. I thought this was a good interpretation from Bennett's Phylactery, I don't know what that means, at Extra Dead JCB. Boomers have the same problem as post-op transsexuals. their lives make no sense if leftism winds up a discredited and, more importantly, uncool relic on the wrong side of history. Trump represents the terror of that possibility, and they hate him like their lives depend on it. And I think there's something to that. I really think there's something to that. That, like, these people have their identities mixed up in their participation in, like, the civil rights movement. And they're sort of stuck in this, in that mindset. And if they're not on the right side of history, if everything they've, you know, defined themselves by for the last four decades is going away, that's a threat to their, you know, self-actualization. So they're going after it like it is a literal threat for their lives. But it's just because what they're recognizing is that everything they've, what they're refusing to recognize, what they're blocking out of their consciousness with everything they've got is the fact that everything they've dedicated their lives to and believed in and thought they were working towards was a gigantic lie designed to destroy their nation. And they can't accept that. It has to be good what they've been involved in. It has to be right and the end of history. Otherwise, you know, who are they? So Trump has signed an order designating Antifa a domestic terrorist operation, which is very good to see. Now we'll hopefully be able to wrap some of these people up. And look, I know, you know, people are kind of freaking out about this, and they're a little bit, you know, confused. And they're saying, well, is this criminalizing, like, free speech? Like, this is crazy. And look, hey, better safe than sorry, you know, just cut them out. You know, if you're in communication with somebody who might be Antifa, I think it's best just to cut them off. Just don't ever communicate with them again. I think just it's best for everybody on the left, better safe than sorry. Just cut out communication with the more radical friends of yours. You gotta stay away from them. Cause if you're in communication with an Antifa person and FBI is going through their phone records, like you don't want to have anything to do with that. So I think it's probably just best for your safety and continuing freedom. You better just fully and, you know, openly separate yourself from these left-wing radicals. You don't want to be involved in anything they're doing. Then you're a terrorist and you're going to go to jail. President Trump has issued an executive order formally designating Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, marking the most direct federal action against the group to date. The order characterizes Antifa as a, quote, militarist anarchist enterprise intent on overthrowing the U.S. government and law enforcement. In the statement, it says the organization orchestrates campaigns of violence across the country, including riots, assaults on officers, armed standoffs, and harassment of political figures. According to the text, Antifa not only recruits and radicalizes young Americans, but also works to hide its funding and shield the identity of its members. So yeah, this is very good to see. This article from Postmillennial goes through just a small smattering collection of just some of the more violent and insane attacks from Antifa. Even just this year, July 2025, members of Antifa cell ambushed officers in an ICE facility. Deranged rioters viciously assaulted federal agents. In February 2024, a transgender Antifa terrorist detonated an explosive device outside the office of Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. The terrorist left by numerous stickers with Antifa slogans and anarchist symbols. Again, this attack on Antifa has been delayed for a very long time due to the influence of the likes of AIPAC and the ADL, who say that Antifa is just fighting for freedom, and actually it's white supremacists that are the only terror threat in this country. But finally, and as I guess a consequence of the assassination of Charlie Kirk, Antifa will be treated like the terrorist network it truly is. And again, people confused about this or concerned about this need to understand no new powers have been established for the government. Nothing about this grants the government the ability to do anything to anybody that is not associated with Antifa. This isn't a Patriot Act 2.0. They have not granted themselves new abilities to surveil or, you know, bust up peaceful protests. All they've done is taken the existing capabilities of the federal government, which has up to this point been focused entirely on the right wing, and it just turns them to Antifa. So I'm not worried about this. I don't think this is an overreach. I don't think this is, you know, threatening the First Amendment. That's how the leftists are portraying it. But it's really not. It's really not. It is declaring a domestic terrorist organization a domestic terrorist organization and taking the already existing capabilities and, you know, rights, I guess, of the law enforcement and telling them to go after Antifa. So I see this as pretty much entirely a good thing. and explains the reasoning in the announcement made by the White House, which again is just wonderful. And it's a winning, it is a winning stance to take. It's a winning policy. 9 in 10 Republicans are concerned about left-wing violence with good reason. The left is not just going to stop on their own volition. They celebrate the murderous activity of their more extremist elements. And I think I'm going to save it for tomorrow because I do want to go to calls and I don't quite have time to really get into it today. But they're planning something very big in 2028. On May Day in 2028, they are planning a massive nationwide strike seeking to cripple America. And they're planning this 3 years out. Okay, and we've got information about this and they're a little bit public about this. And then I'm going to apply it to historically how communist revolutions take place because they always happen just like this. So what's happening right now is the socialists, having been beaten at the ballot box, are now coordinating and collaborating to get into positions of authority in every industry to either start unions in places they don't exist, like Amazon or, you know, Walmart. They're putting people in to agitate for unionization and then putting people into existing unions also that they can collaborate to shut down the American economy in order to make demands that we move in a more socialist direction. It is literally the exact playbook that the communists ran in Germany in 1918 as they attempted to overthrow that country. So I'm going to relate it back to a bunch of that. I'm going to get into it more tomorrow, but I feel like I should warn you now. May Day 2028, they are planning a communist revolution in this country, and they're working behind the scenes now to put people in positions of authority to shut down major and important industries. And this is crazy, and one of the craziest things out of all of, like, this might be, I don't know. The news cycle today is, or these days, is just whack, and it's just, I don't know what's more insane than anything else, but this has to be unprecedented. Sinclair Broadcasting Corporation canceled airing a tribute to Charlie Kirk because their ABC stations got violent threats. And they announced this for some reason. So, you know, and all this talk about Jimmy Kimmel and, oh my gosh, President Trump and blah, blah, blah. That's all fake. None of that even existed in the first place. But what does exist is that you have radical leftists shooting up the ABC affiliate for canceling Jimmy Kimmel. Then they released that guy, by the way. By the way, that guy who shot up the ABC affiliate because they canceled Jimmy Kimmel, which was just one of the multiple leftist attacks since the murder of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was murdered on Thursday, before last. Since then, there have been like four or five leftist attacks, including shooting up the ABC affiliate. And in response to that, they say, we're doing what the terrorists want. And by the way, that guy had a hit list. Next on the list were Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino. And the courts in California let him out, set him free, gave him bail, despite him having just fired at a ABC affiliate. And by the way, he's a gun control activist who, by the way, is like constantly posting stuff from the Sandy Hook organization, which, like, I don't know, if we get sued for $1.5 billion because some dude somewhere pees on a grave and we have nothing to do with it. I wonder, are the organizations that are suing us responsible for radicalizing the gun control activists who went out and tried to commit a mass shooting? I don't know. Maybe there's some fairness to be, you know, drawn from all this. But it's just crazy that they're like, oh, yeah, they threatened to kill us, so now we're not going to air the thing we were going to air. We are now submitting to the terrorists. It's like, is this what – so should we have been doing this the whole time? But it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. See, when people on the right wing commit violence – the whoever they're committing violence against doubles down and gets all the support, and the right wing as a whole is all blamed for it. When the left wing commits violence, the corporations bow to them, say, we'll do whatever you want, please just don't hurt us. And also it's the right wing that's violent. It's just completely insane. It's what happened during, George Floyd as well. They riot and burn things and threaten people. And so everybody's like, oh, okay, we'll do whatever you want then, sir. Please, we just don't hurt us. We'll kneel. We'll kiss the casket and we'll fire all the white people. Please don't hurt us. You can just imagine what it would be like if it was right wingers using force to get their way. I'll read this one final thing and then I'll go out to calls. I thought this was really, really well put, and I'll try not to expand on it, but I could probably go off for like 3 hours on this one post because it really is deeply true and I think extremely important in a profound way. It's from a woman named Ashley Land at Ashley_Land on X. As a former leftist myself, I can say part of leftism's malady is a foundational, systemic, and projectional cynicism. They watch the Charlie Kirk Memorial and they find it impossible to accept at face value. Beautiful things can't really be beautiful. True things can't really be true. There must be corruption lurking beneath what appears pure. They must find a way to call what is good evil. Sincerity heals, the gospel heals. I think that is so fundamental to leftism that I find it extremely profound. Kind of obvious, but also like very deep when you really think about how this shapes the way they view the world. It's like that. It's like the meme of the happy family in the 1950s, and some leftist puts a label on all the people, and it's like, that dad might seem happy, but he's secretly gay and abuses his son. And the wife seems happy, but she's been lobotomized and is actually on, you know, all these drugs that make her, you know, stupid. And the daughter is actually transgender and is, you know, deeply conflicted. And the grandfather actually hates black people. And it's like, or maybe it was the 1950s and it was just nice and it was a happy family that's actually just genuinely happy. But it's they're telling on themselves. They genuinely think that you're not telling the truth unless you're expressing the most vile, putrid, dirty things, right? If they don't believe, because these people are, you know, their mindset is sin and lust and greed and power. And they cannot conceive of people that don't think like that. And so when they see people that are just genuine and happy and love God and aren't, you know, trying to screw anybody over, they really do not understand how that can be true. They really think it's almost an inversion where like the more pure you are, the more righteous you are, the more evil they think you are because they think that you're evil. They think everybody's evil. And so the more pure you seem, it's just like the more deceitful you must be. You see what I'm saying? Like if you are presenting yourself as like actually a good person and actually loving, the more you are that thing, the more they think you're covering up your evil. And it's really sick. And it really just goes to show that they really do exist as the lowest common denominator, desperately trying to drag everybody else down to their level. And it's sick, but a very poignant point from a former leftist who was able to break out of that mindset. Without any further ado, I thank you so much for holding on. Katie in Ohio is our first caller. Go ahead. You're on the air with a comment about Trump.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I really want to appreciate you and not swearing on your station because I have a 3-year-old and I want to teach you about what's going on in the world without using swear words, which is hard sometimes.
It's very hard. it's very hard.
Yes. Second of all, I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, yeah, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like it's amazing. But I'm trying to be quick.
That's okay. Well, it's all right. Okay. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world. No. But I was going to mention this yesterday when Rex was talking about a lot of his things, and I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like you really don't know what it's going to do for you because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor. It's not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is. But it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin. You're missing a mineral. And you don't even realize it until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish Sea Moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out. You can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie, but that's not what you called in for.
Not exactly, but I will say I loved his self-element formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine. And he's got some really good formulas put together. And they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I wish you would bring back the Caveman. It was a bone broth protein powder. It was really good. With the bee pollen, I loved that.
I remember that well, but try the colostrum. The bovine colostrum plus might be a good replacement for that. Thank you. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
I like it too. I love the greens powder. I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's good, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones picture is on like my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's like, amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But like, no, but our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to like the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California. I lived there for 10 years. That's where I went to acupuncture school. And then when Trump was in his first administration, I was getting so much political persecution. I was just trying to keep my mouth shut, keep my head down, like stop asking me questions. And people went after me, and it really affected my work because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones. That's when I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio, and 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes. Yes, which is also why I think Jones needs to come out with a library to help us reclaim our history. Our history has been hijacked. People have been so brainwashed. If he could have some kind of an online library to reconnect some of that stuff, maybe with like Jay Dyer or Doug Wilson. You guys really need to call Doug Wilson and look up Doug Wilson, please. He's getting a lot of smear campaigns by the left right now, and he's really worth looking into and potentially having on the show.
Okay, I'll look into that. You know, you're absolutely right. I was mentioning before that there's this May Day protest that they're planning for, and they're trying to get. And I went to look for, because you know I'm sort of familiar with like the revolution that happened, or the attempted revolution trying to turn Germany into a communist state in 1918. And I go to YouTube and I search, you know, communist revolution 1918 Germany, German revolution 1918. And every video is literally from a channel that's like Marxism Lives, or like, you know, the Red Brigade, a YouTube channel. So it's like literally you go to look for history on YouTube and it's actual communists spreading communist propaganda about history. You cannot find real history. Final thoughts, Katie. We got about 30 seconds before we go to commercial break.
Oh, man. Oh, I really want to cover 3 major points. I don't think Trump made that post because it wasn't signed DJT, ooh. Thank you for attention to this matter. Jones has talked about that before.
Interesting.
I think...
Stay on the line, Katie, because I let you go on for a while plugging our supplements. But I'll let you actually say your piece here on the other side. And then we'll continue to go directly out to your calls. I see Tim and Michael and Randy. I'm wearing contacts today. I can't even read these names. So we'll go to all of you. All of you, whatever your name is.
He tipped his hat, took a stroll through town. All the folks smiled back. Not a single frown. Cane in hand, boots tapping the street, whistling some ragtime, snappy and sweet.
But just up the block, what did he see? The Federal Reserve, oh golly gee. Bankers in top hats, puffing cigars, guarding their treasures like kings of czars.
With a swing and a sway came a mighty call. Jones climbed high on the wrecking ball. Boom went the bricks, dust filled the air. Gold bars shining so bright you couldn't stare.
He packed that Model T full to the brim, stacked up high till the edges grew thin. Down Main Street he rolled, the people did cheer. Jones brought the gold, our hero is here.
So raise your hats, let the right time play. Alex Jones saved the town that very day.
From the banker's hands, the riches all returned, and the Federal Reserve, well, it crashed and burned.
I'm jacked up on the meth lane. Blue is the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at theolivestore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room. We're taking your calls for this final segment of this Tuesday, September 23rd broadcast. Katie in Ohio, thank you for holding over. Final thoughts, ma'am.
Thank you. So I'm curious if who's controlling Trump's social media? We know he is in a bubble. Obviously, he didn't realize Project Warp Speed wasn't the best thing that the president's ever done in history. Like, that's so ridiculous how long he held on to that idea. There is a possibility that these, like, tech people could control everything he sees on his social media, and that they could hack in and make posts for him. That would explain this flip-flopping that goes back and forth. But he didn't put DJT on there, and thank you for attention to this matter.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I doubt it's happening without his permission, but that is an interesting thing to leave off, because he does always sign it that when it's actually him. So, yeah, it's an interesting idea. You know, When it comes to Warp Speed, I've gotten in this conversation so many times with people. When Warp Speed was happening in 2020, we at InfoWars knew exactly what was going on. We knew the vaccine was poison. We knew that it was all fraudulent. But we also totally understood why Trump was doing what he was doing, because the media had taken over people's minds, and the economy was going to crash if people didn't go back to work. And people weren't going to go back to work without a vaccine. They had been told by the media, you should not go back to work until there's a vaccine. And then they tried to withhold the vaccine until Biden was in office. So Trump preempted them by doing Warp Speed. There was nothing Trump could do to stop the vaccine from going out. It was going to come out no matter what he did. And even if he tried to stop it, I mean, go back and look at our coverage in 2020. Operation Warp Speed was a necessary thing so that they weren't able to destroy the American economy. And as much as we don't like Operation Warp Speed, at the time, nobody was like, what is Trump doing? It was all like, okay, don't take the vaccine, but he needs to release one because the economy is going to crash if people don't go back to work, and nobody's going back to work without the vaccine. But don't take it. I mean, so I understand why Trump did Operation Warp Speed, but the way he talks about it is still he doesn't understand, you know, how bad the vaccine itself is and doesn't want to be blamed for the mass murder that it actually represents. So I you know, Operation Warp Speed, I have a little bit of a nuanced view on that, despite thinking that the vaccine is pure evil and a total weapon of mass destruction. I don't think Trump could have ever stopped it if he wanted to. And maybe that, you know, again, he sort of, maybe that's what he's doing with all this stuff. He can't stop the Ukraine war, might as well own it. He can't stop the vaccine, might as well own it. He can't stop Israel bombing Qatar, might as well own it, right? I mean, that does seem to be sort of his tactic, and there's a through line between all these things. Thank you for the call, Katie. Let's go to Michael in Canada now, in the CCP colony of Canada. Go ahead, Michael, you're on the air.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening.
Yeah, we are in a communist country right now.
Yeah, you guys are kind of screwed.
I'm scared. I want to come and scrub toilets for InfoWars right now.
Just to get out of your country?
Well, and to help you. I am scared as hell because now guess what they're doing in Cape Breton as of today?
Oh, God. What?
Confiscating firearms.
Are they seriously?
Google it.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, you literally had a Canadian law enforcement official come out and say the best way to deal with a criminal is to comply. Like, they're not even...
The criminals don't comply with shit.
Well, obviously, that's what makes them comply. But you have to comply. You have to be a victim. It's the best thing to do. Just comply. Give up your stuff. Somebody breaks into your house to abuse your daughter, you got to just let them do it. Just comply, because it can get dangerous if you try to fight back. And that's the official warning from the Canadian government as they swamp your entire country with millions upon millions of hostile foreigners who then commit terrorist attacks against each other over politics in India. I mean, the whole thing is madness, man. Canada's is doomed, absolutely doomed.
Ontario is a absolute crap show.
Yeah.
It's just Indians just attacking everyone.
Well, you know, hey, if it ever gets too much for you,
it can't be sustainable.
Say it again.
It can't be sustainable.
Well, no. I mean, if you really have a big problem with it, I'm sure if you go to the doctor, they'll kill you. Right?
Well, great. I'd rather clean toilets at InfoWars headquarters and I won't be like stabbed by an Indian.
I don't really support like running away from these problems because I don't think there's anywhere to flee to. But I would not blame you in the slightest if you wanted to get out of Canada and come join us in America. We can hold the fort down here because Canada is gone. I mean, it's crazy. It really, you know, Canada has more like Sikh members of parliament than India does. I'm pretty sure you have like 22 Canadian parliamentary Sikh people of the Sikh religion. India only has like 11. Yeah, you guys have been completely taken over, and everything I see out of Canada is just another layer of complete insanity. And literally, when you're like, do you hear what happened in Canada today? I'm like, oh my God. Because the last couple things have been like this, you know, this horrible series of crimes that the Canadian government's response is to tell the, you know, innocent people to just comply, just do what they say. And then they're going to take, and then the Canadian government's taking your guns. And then the one yesterday was a woman with a hospice, you know, to care for people in their final days, was forcibly shut down by the government so they could take over her hospice and use it to provide assisted suicide services. I mean, the whole thing is just a suicidal cult of madmen. So, yeah, I would get out. Frankly, I would get out of Canada if I were you, just like I'd get out of California before they pass a law to steal your children. I mean, they are getting crazy, folks. I do not blame you for prioritizing self-preservation. Thank you for the call, Michael. Let's go to Randy in Texas. You're on the air, Randy.
Hey, Harrison, how you doing, man?
Good, thanks.
Awesome. Hey, just wanted to let you know I'm a VIP member. I pretty much buy all the oil stuff. My freaking vitamin cabinet looks like something Arnold Schwarzenegger would stock, and my closet looks like a Bigley warehouse over here. But
excellent.
I just wanted to thank Alex. I wanted to thank Alex Jones the other day for posting up those war bond codes live on the air. I was able to score a trench knife.
Oh, nice! So, you got one of the codes, huh?
Yeah, man, it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but no, I wanted to talk about Trump today. Just owning everybody in front of the UN General Assembly, it was freaking poetic. You could tell, honestly, they were trolling him by shutting off the escalator and then shutting off his teleprompter, and he just freaking waxed for an hour, just trolling the hell out of him. So,
yeah, and remember last time he was in front of the UN as president, he was telling them, hey, Germany, you're getting all your oil from Russia. That's a mistake. And they were all laughing at him with their little translators, like mocking him. And, of course, he was exactly right. So I wonder if maybe his, the way they received him was maybe a little bit more respectful this time, since the last time they laughed at him, they've been humiliated by that ever since. So hopefully he has some more cachet with the international community there. But wasn't that great?
Yeah, no, it was, but I mean, you could tell. I mean, those I mean, assembly members still like on their phones, you know, dismissing him, you know, snickering, making faces and stuff. But I mean, he said it again. He's like, "I was right. I was right about mm-hmm. everything that I said the last time, and I'm right about this too." But you know, kudos for you guys to calling Trump out on stuff like this, like what he put out with his tweet.
You know what?
Basically, backtracked around everything that he did with the Ukraine war, and you know, and
I wonder
how he,
you know, maybe you could tell, because I, you know, we received that news sort of right as I was going on air. How are the MAGA people supporting this? Because you know, there's a lot of MAGA accounts out there that sort of, you know, love everything Trump does. How are they justifying a total reversal on Ukraine? I mean, that seems like a bridge too far.
It is. It honestly is. And I, you know, you guys and maybe a couple of other people online are actually calling out Trump for what he's doing wrong. And it's good that the administration reacts the way they do. And they, you know, and Jones says it himself, you know, like, hey, you know, it's good that we have an administration that listens, that has the pulse on the people, and they, you know, they quickly reverse on things, which is good. So
it'd be nice if they didn't
guys,
do it.
You guys are holding the administration accountable, and when most of the media isn't, and you know you got a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of MAGA accounts that are just, you know, parroting everything that the administration says, and they go along with everything that they say. So
yeah, that ain't us, brother. No, we are genuinely free. We are genuinely, you know, unencumbered by loyalty to any political party or any political person, and we will call them out when they do wrong, or, you know, express what just we know millions of people in America out there are feeling. And that, if nothing else, is, I think, a valuable service we provide. Just be trying to desperately, and we were talking to Owen about this when I first started working here. So we were going out to do something and it wasn't quite working out how we thought, and we weren't going to do it. And it was like, no, we need to do this because, and what it was San Marcos University, Texas State University in San Marcos, their school newspaper put out that story that said your DNA is an abomination. And it was basically like white people's DNA is toxic and needs to be eradicated. And so we went out and just took a bullhorn, read the article out, and, you know, basically just told the student body, this is what your school supports, this is evil, this is wrong. And it was like, well, we wanted to interview the people that wrote the article, but we couldn't get in contact with them. We thought about giving up. And then it was like, we need to say something about this, because right now there's millions of people all over America reading this article, being outraged by it, being infuriated by it, and they don't have anybody to yell at. And they don't have a bullhorn, and they don't have a, you know, a microphone to vent their fury at what they're seeing here. So like, we have to be that. We have to be the avatar of all of these people that we know are out there that do not deserve to be demonized like they are. And we can, not to speak for them, but be their voice and show the outrage that millions of people are feeling, but isn't reflected in any media other than us. So if nothing else, I hope that we can at least express the frustrations that everybody's out there is feeling. Cause without us, you know, no one's going to know. No one's going to know how the vast majority of America is feeling, because they're not given a voice on mainstream media. Thank you so much for the call, Randy. Let's go to James in New Hampshire now, I believe that is. James, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Is this Harrison?
Speaking.
Dude,
come on now, James.
I don't know. Dude.
You're on the air, James. What do you want to say?
I want to say that, like, you guys are not the tip of the spear.
Uh-huh.
Like, you guys don't really talk about the Jews or anything. Like, I'm not trying to be mean or anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead.
I love you, and I love Owen.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. I love Owen. And I think he was trying to, like, talk about the Jews. Like, have you ever seen Europa, The Last Battle?
Uh-huh.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about it?
I think it is the opposite of the History Channel. I've talked about it quite a bit. We're putting on my yarmulke here. We're putting on my yarmulke because I've been discovered. I've been found out. You know, you can call me all sorts of things. It comes off my back like like a dug off water. Yes, I've seen Europa, The Last Battle. Yes, I've seen all these documentaries. What about it?
Yeah, but Alex is always on the show being like, it's not the Jews. It's not the Jews. It's no. Oh, my God. It's never the Jews. It's like, it kind of is the Jews.
Okay. That's brilliant. It's brilliant. I'd never thought of it that way, James. Huh. It is the Jews after all. Huh. Never thought of it. Here's what I want to know. What do you think the response should be now that you've discovered it's the Jews? What are you going to do about it?
Dude, maybe Hitler was right.
Was he? Because what happened to him? I can't remember. Did he win the war, or did he lead his entire country down the path of absolute permanent destruction? Like, what are you talking about? He was obviously wrong. I'm like, what?
Like, dude, like Harrison, you're a little hipster, like with your little hair, and you and Owen with your little hair and your little, like you guys think that you're like I like Owen.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, Owen grew on me. Okay.
Okay.
But I just don't appreciate this. Like, I'm the tip of the spear. I'm like God, like, oh God. And then you guys don't ever talk about, like, dude, maybe the Jews, maybe they are the ones that won World War II. Maybe, like, Patton,
yeah, maybe
General Patton, George Patton said that we fought the wrong enemy. Do you ever think about that?
Do I ever think about that? I'm probably the only person on American television who has detailed the assassination of General Patton by the Jewish interests in Europe,
died in a car
ever.
Crash.
No, it's not good enough for you, though, is it?
No, he died in a car crash, right? And he's like, this is a hell of a way to die.
Mm-hmm. And then he went to the hospital and was killed there. Do you even know?
What?
And then he was killed in the hospital?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, General Patton was assassinated.
Yeah, he died in a car crash.
Oh, my God, dude. This is the problem. When did you watch Europa, The Last Battle?
I've watched it, like, many times. Like, it's, and then, like, even Nick Fuentes and shit, like, even Nick Fuentes, who's, like, this, like, claims to be, like, this, like, anti-Jewish guy, like, he even says, like, oh, this was all fake. So, like, dude, like, I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Okay. Well, it's not really that complicated. Basically, everything in the mainstream tells one side of the story. Europa tells the other side of the story. The facts are somewhere in the middle because you got to take both sides into account. I mean, this really isn't complicated. It's not really that hard. We talk about the Jews constantly. We just don't call it the Jews, just like we don't talk about the blacks and we don't really talk about the whites. We don't talk about people as groups unless we're referencing the groups, in which case we just are careful with our language. We just are exact with our language and we discuss all of this. I don't know what the issue is exactly. Hitler lost. I don't know what else to tell you. Also, Hitler was dealing with a population that, by the way, had not had 60 years of Holocaust propaganda in their high schools. So maybe we're in a different situation now. Like, how I genuinely don't understand how you can say Hitler was right when he literally destroyed Germany forever. And Germany might never recover because of the war that he, you know, led the country into. Like, wasn't he wrong? You know, go back in time and talk to Hitler in like 1925. Would you be like, do it, dude. You're great. You've got the right idea. Keep going. Or would you go, hey man, things do not turn out well for you. I'm sorry to tell you. I mean, he was wrong, right? I mean, you admit that he was wrong in the way that things turned out. He didn't do the correct thing.
Dude, he fought his ass off. They fought the whole world. Like even the other countries from like all over the place, like, even fought for the Germans. Even Jews fought for the Germans. Like how can you just dismiss this like as it's just nothing? Like dude, maybe he was right in a way. Maybe he wasn't completely right, but maybe he was like a controlled opposition. Maybe like Donald Trump is, maybe all these people pledging to the wall and shit in, you know, for the Jews and stuff. Like maybe he had a point.
Sorry. Producers chimed in the ear to tell me that, I'm sorry, Hitler would have hated you. Sorry, Hitler would have, put you in a camp for being retarded. Unfortunately, you would be liquidated. And, I'm sorry, that's Hitler's ghost just whispered that in my ear. Yeah, look, we're perfectly clear about, what we say. And yes, half the time we get called Mossad agents and half the time we get called literal Nazis. And the fact is we just tell the truth about exactly what's happening. And we tell you about the Jewish groups that are trying to destroy, you know, speech, but also Jews are victims of all of this as well. And the thing to understand and the thing that I would think would be obvious at this point was that they need the anti-Semitism. They are nothing without anti-Semitism. How are they going to pass laws if they don't have anti-Semitism? Why do you know, I should play the video. It's been going a little bit viral. It's from an account called Predictive History. But it basically lays out an argument that I think is very compelling, that like the reason Israel is being so brutal and horrifying in front of everybody is on purpose to make people hate Israel. Because the more insane and outrageous Israel acts, the more they brutalize, you know, their opponents, the more anti-Semitism appears, people criticizing Israel in America, the more anti-Semitism that appears, the more American Jews in particular think of Israel as a safe harbor, think of them as a protective force, become more aligned and more loyal to Israel because they feel like, you know, they're hated by people in America. So it's like you have to understand the dichotomy. You have to understand the false dichotomy and the usefulness of this division to the bad guys in power, many of whom are Jewish and are, you know, sponsoring all of this. I mean, you have to be able to see this is more complicated than you're putting it. And when you look at that and the thing I don't understand is like, how do you study the Jews? How do you watch, you know, Europa over and over? And then it's like, you haven't figured out any of their tactics. You haven't figured out any of their strategies. I mean, you think they're like this evil force that's taking over everybody and like the solution to that is to yell about them? Wouldn't you have more like sophisticated tactics in trying to undo this worldwide conspiracy? Or you just think more people need to talk about it and it'll solve itself. Like how are you going to, and this is the thing, we actually have problems with real oppressive organizations, places like the ADL, which is an explicitly Jewish group. I'm not calling them that. They call themselves that. Fine. They're censoring people. They're destroying free speech. They support Antifa and train the FBI and, you know, are the ones responsible for framing white supremacy as number one and practically exclusive terror threat in America. Do you think it's more important that everybody knows the ADL is Jewish or that the ADL is destroyed? In my, you know, paradigm, I want the ADL to go away. Not because they're Jewish, because they censor people. And in fact, if you are just an anti-Semite and you just hate Jewish people and then you go after the ADL, guess what? Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to care because they're going to be like, oh, you're just an anti-Semite. You just hate the ADL because they're Jewish. Shut up. You don't have any legitimate claims. We have legitimate claims against the ADL. Not because they're Jewish, but because they're censorious and tyrannical and a foreign, you know, actuary of a foreign state. So we have problems with all of that. Do you think our complaints about that and our attempts to, you know, fight back against them in their own ideas is hurt or harmed by people yelling about the Jews? Like, strategically, it's stupid. I also just think historically you're wrong. And it's just not that simple. And when you try to simplify it down to that, you're literally playing into the hands of the people you think you're fighting. You have to be sophisticated here. Like, it's not enough that you just are angry at people in power or, you know, have identified a Jewish influence in some of the more tyrannical stuff that the American government is doing. I recognize that too. But you also have to recognize that your average Jew doesn't deserve to be associated with your George Soros's or your Larry Fink's. And in fact, it's that the Jewish association that protects the bad guys because the regular Jews feel like they're under attack too. Because people lump them all together. Anyway, hope that makes sense to everybody, but really was not expecting to I'd usually get called a Nazi. This is kind of a breath of fresh air. Thanks, James. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. You know, watch all the documentaries you want. I think you should read some books too while you're at it. We have time for one more call. We'll go to another James in Indiana. James in Indiana, we only have a minute on in the show. You're on the air.
All right, I'll make this quick. I was listening to this wonderful show, you know, American Journal, and Miss Morello was showing a video of this guy that was falling around. It got over 8 million views.
Yeah.
That should be InfoWars' next shirt. Stalkers get more views than Jimmy Kimmel.
Way more views. Y'all know Jimmy Kimmel gets 129,000 people in the male 18 to 34 demographic. I guarantee you I'm talking to more people right now than Jimmy Kimmel ever is. And that's why they want to destroy us. That's why they have to try to sue us. That's why they have to frame and fake all this crap about Jimmy Kimmel. They're losing. They're failing. They're falling to the wayside. Folks, you can trust InfoWars. We know what we're doing. We know what we're pursuing. We have a very clear North Star. We chase and pursue relentlessly, and it's Americana, freedom, Christianity, love for all people of every race, color, and creed, and freedom above all.
Fentanyl, the dragon, left China and flew to hang out with Alex and try something new. He landed in Texas, they barbecued steaks, and after they ate, they cleaned the dishes and plates. Alex jumped on his back and they flew to the store to get some supplements that you can't ignore. He got Ultimate Life Force and Methylene Blue, then he paid with a war bond that was crispy and new.
Defense, ultimate shield against the daily onslaught of toxins and globalist schemes. Stay alive and survive.